Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar here with you for another week. Hello, everybody. And hey, Jay.
Hello, Dave Kaufman.
How are you, sir?
I'm excellent. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm all rested and recovered.
Yes, you look good.
Thank you. throwing me a curveball.
I just want to make sure that I'm on the show again next week. So.
You are guaranteed your place.
Thank you.
Yes. Jay, first off, right off the bat. I want to thank everybody for last week for the Gary Carter evening. It was just the most wonderful night. And I said it on Melnick in the afternoon, and I'll say it again here. I have not had that good a time at an Expos-related event really since long before the Expos left. And it was so nice to see so many people there and for such a good cause, and was so happy that Sarah Cook was there and said a few words. That made my night. That was just to see somebody who's done so much and so much good in our city. And yeah, I'm right back there right now, Jay.
It was exactly the Irish wake that I wanted.
Yeah, man, you called it, and good on you.
Despite the, I mean, it is a somber event because it is a tribute to a man that passed away.
But we did not treat it as such. It was a celebration.
It didn't feel like that at all. There was a great vibe in the room. You couldn't move in there.
It was crazy, eh?
You couldn't move in there, and it was so great to meet, to put a face on so much of the people that follow us on Twitter, a lot of our listeners. It was just great to meet these people finally.
Yeah. Thank you all, and thank you to everybody that donated to the silent auction and to the raffle. I don't know if you realized, but we kept calling raffle numbers and nobody was responding. I think it's because they were in the back at the bar.
And, yes.
which, I don't know, that happens from time to time, I think.
Yes, I have a whole bunch of tickets right now that I don't know if they're winners or not.
Well, they are no longer winners. What we've decided to do is, with everything that's left over, the Sarah Cook Fund is going to start a website probably later this week. I'll keep you all informed through Twitter. You can follow Jay and I. Jay's at JPub Radio, and I'm at The Kaufman Show. And otherwise, go to the Kaufman Show Facebook page, and we'll put up all the information. They're going to do an online auction for everything that's left over. And there's a ton of stuff.
Yeah, we simply just didn't have the time.
Or the space, really.
Or the space, yeah.
We ran out of room. There were so many great things. The gorgeous Expos photographs that George Manios donated from the private collection of Denis Brodeur were probably the hottest things there.
They really were.
They took up most of that table.
They really were. They were fantastic photos. Photos I had never seen before. So clear and crisp. They looked like they were taken yesterday. And some of them were of 1975, 1976. Amazing.
You know, it was, if someone's a photographer, they'd know why. But the outdoor shots, the ones from Jerry, the ones from West Palm Beach, way better than the Big O shots.
Well, I wonder why. Yeah, it's called sunlight. That's right, my friend.
Well,
yeah.
But there was, I would imagine that for most of the time that Denis Brodeur was taking pictures of the Olympic Stadium, especially considering most of the shots that we had available were from the Carter era, the roof was open. There was no roof.
Yes.
So there would have been sunlight as well, but.
But not coming in from all sides.
No,
it depended what time of day it was.
There you go. So just a wonderful night. And we'll recap it a couple of times. We've got a couple of guests on tonight who were at the event. We've got Randy Smith coming on in about a half an hour's time. He filmed the whole thing and took pictures, and they're going to be available to all of you for free. So we'll have some more details on that. Jeremy Taggart was there. He was one of the musicians playing.
Jamming away.
You know him from Our Lady Peace, and you will hear from him around 12:30, I think, or so.
Okay.
Coming up in a few minutes' time, we've got Benjamin Christensen from the Fan Cave, our MLB correspondent, live from Broadway and 4th. What craziness is going on in Major League Baseball right now? We'll find out. I know that the Orioles got, they lost today.
Okay.
14-3 to Texas.
Okay.
This is the same Orioles team that beat the Red Sox in 17 innings yesterday with Chris Davis, their outfielder, DH, who went 0-for-8, got the win, pitched 2 innings, and struck out Adrian Gonzalez to finish the game.
Maybe he's found his niche.
Baseball, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to get an update from David Gourlay from Ottawa Champions Baseball on their ticket drive. We'll speak with Kaufman Show legal correspondent Dan Gradinsky from Borden Ladner Gervais. That's always a good time. Unless it gets too serious, then it's a solemn time. But we'll see where it goes.
It shouldn't get that serious. I mean, lawyer
stuff
is
just the law,
funny.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just the law.
It's funny, isn't it?
Well, I imagine we'll touch on New Orleans.
Okay.
Because that's, we need a follow-up.
Yeah.
One of the beauties of this show is that we can do a little bit of long-form journalism, and we can follow up on stories. And that's why I want to have David Gourlay on, too.
Right.
From Ottawa Champs Baseball. Let's see where it's headed. No point in just taking a story and then leaving it. You can go back through the archives, listen to all our old stuff, and occasionally, when it's worth it, we'll follow it up. Also, we've got Jeff Pullman on, Mystery Ball 58. Jay, you've got to get into this.
Okay.
He's a Stratomatic nut.
Oh, boy.
He's an author, and what he does is he recreates seasons and then writes about them, but not just the season. It's like he's telling a story of a murder mystery in this one, Mystery Ball 58. You can find it online. And he updates it every week.
Okay.
And it's a murder mystery, but it involves, like, baseball's kind of always in the background in it. And it's the 58 season, which is the first year out west for the Giants and the Dodgers. Very interesting stuff.
Okay.
So we'll get into that.
I got to pick up on that a little bit.
I'm not a Stratomatic guy. I just missed that era. I have memories of my older cousin playing it when I was a kid. But no, I was a video game baseball guy for.
Yeah, I had a later form of Stratomatic. It was called Fantasy Baseball, and it kind of worked out like a softcover workbook that you used to get in high school.
Okay.
It was like a form of Stratomatic, pre-video game era. Never got into it.
The Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. And we'll be back.
Here comes the night.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Jimmy G is here. John Kakalakis is here as well. And we're going to talk some baseball. We'll get back to the hockey later. I know that Gary Bettman teased everybody tonight up here. And I have a bit of a different take on that.
Okay.
But we'll...
Yeah, a lot of hockey going on too.
So. Yeah, and the business side as well. And yeah. We'll delve in, but indulge me if you will.
Okay.
It's the... It's about that time. It's the Kaufman Show MLB Fan Cave correspondent making his triumphant return to the show after, well, I don't know. What's 24 hours times 7?
Oh, come on.
It hasn't been.
No math, Kaufman, please.
So, you're right. Only math will be baseball related, I promise you, from here on.
Even
in.
That.
Okay. Ben Christensen is in the MLB Fan Cave. You can follow him on Twitter at Shaka Brody, Shaka Brodie. I don't know. It's some... hippie West Coast term. I don't really get it, but hey. And he is a friend of mine. Please vote for him. You can go to the MLB Fan Cave website, check out his video. Here he is. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Gentlemen, what's cracking?
How are you, sir?
I'm good. And I did the math quick in my head. It's 161 hours.
There you go. And we've missed you every second of it.
Oh, no, 168 hours. My bad.
Oh, well.
I did 23, not 24 hours.
Well, yeah, well,
give or take 7 hours, yeah.
Are there 23 exactly. hours in a New York day?
It feels like it a lot of times. I do so much, and I get very little sleep, as you know. So.
Yeah, but I think that's what you're supposed to do when you're in New York City. You've got a ton of ball games to watch every day, and we can congratulate you. You've hit the 20% mark on the season. You are one-fifth
yes!
of the way through.
Oh, it's amazing I lasted this long.
Oh, come on now. You've got miles to go before you can sleep,
no,
my
that's
friend.
True.
Miles to go.
And it feels like it went by really quick, which is like the really like depressing thing about it, because I want it to continue. And the time just seems so short.
Well, you see, then this is... I'll go back to a couple of weeks ago. Jay, remember when I almost kind of incredulously was like, it's like you're at summer camp.
Yeah.
That's really that is. Feeling. I remember being at summer camp as a kid and being like, oh, no, we've already done 2 out of the 8 weeks. What are we going to do? It's almost over.
Exactly.
Well, you sound like, I mean, it's that vacation feeling. It's well, yeah. You know, but you have so much to go and the season is so long. And I know because you've seen a perfect game already and you've had so much great baseball that I imagine that it feels almost like everything's been magnified a bit.
It really has. Especially with the no-hitter already, and especially with the perfect game, we've already had somebody hit for the cycle this year. We had just a plethora of home runs in the first weekend. And, oh, man. And then, yeah, we have 6 guys legitimately competing to hit 400 this year. The most illogical of or improbable of being Derek Jeter leading the league with a .397 average.
Yeah, nobody seems to care that he what his salary is now, eh?
No, exactly. It's like that whole speculation last year that, you know, oh, Jeter's really dogging it. He's at the end of his career, and it's just like
obviously not.
You might want to retract that statement. So.
I can't get behind this 400 thing, and do check out Ben. Ben released a video on YouTube. Actually, you released 2 today, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, the other you had released 2 videos today on YouTube. I guess you can find them by typing in Shaka Brody, right?
Yeah. I was going to say either on that or my YouTube username, I believe, is Santa Cruz in 2003. But I believe you can look through Shaka Brody as well.
Yeah, so well, I think we can find it through. I think I found it through Shaka Brody. Otherwise, follow him on Twitter, and he'll post them up again right after the our conversation. But the first one I want to talk to you about, because to me, the 400 is one of those. I mean, it's like DiMaggio's hitting streak. These are things that just won't ever happen in my mind that – you know, the closest we got was in 1994. And if Tony Gwynn couldn't get to it, then I really don't see any of today's hitters getting there.
You know, I debate that because when I made the video, and especially there's a blog post that's going to go with it, which is much more detailed and extremely lengthy about these 6 particular guys, in which case it's David Wright, David Ortiz, Derek Jeter, Josh Hamilton, Brian Lehair, and I feel like I left one out, so I'll just... Oh, David Wright.
Okay.
And the reality behind it, especially comparing their numbers, and this is all just based on their April numbers.
Sure.
April numbers compared to Ted Williams' April numbers back in 1941.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Williams only played nine games during that season in April. 6 of those 9 games, he was a pinch hitter. So he was already at .389 at the end of April. And I think he only had 4 more pinch hitting spots the rest of the season. However, he had 147 walks, and he only had about 453 at-bats, I believe. And so I look at the front runner, Jeter, he's already at 121 at-bats, and he's leading the league in at-bats. So he's already about 29% of the way there, and we're only a month and a fraction into the season. So, yeah, the probability of that happening isn't really there. It could happen, but there are a list of variables that need to happen.
Well, that's the beauty of baseball, right? I mean, it could happen the any given day, if you will. Jay is sitting here shaking his head at me, and again, I get it. I like the idea of getting caught up in it. It's just that it seems to me like, I mean, 1941 is such a long time ago, and
exactly.
So many great hitters have come and gone since. Do you really think that there's somebody in Major League Baseball today that lives up to the vaunted Ted Williams?
I believe there is a chance, but the unfortunate 2 things that need to happen are, and one of them is unfortunate. One is just you need to have a lot of patience, and so you need to walk a lot and get a wide array of, you know, wild pitchers. The other thing is you need to get injured at some point in time during the season. Yeah. So,
well, but you know what? By picking guys like David Wright and Ortiz and even Jeter, considering his age, I think that's got a better chance than any of them hitting 400.
I think you have to qualify by having 3-point-something at-bats per team game. Is it?
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, 3.1 at-bats per team game, not your games, per team game. So, I mean...
Oh, yeah, totally.
The likelihood is, wow.
And especially for, I think it was Matt Kemp was the guy I left off the list. A guy like him who has Andre Ethier batting right behind him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not going to get walked intentionally. and have a dangerous hitter like that right behind him. And then Jeter, the same thing. I mean, the fact that he's a leadoff hitter, it's just like, it makes it so, I don't know.
Ben, do you think
I feel like, I just want it to happen more than anything, just based on how magical this year has been so far, and to have something like that added onto it would just be mind-blowing.
Well, you know what, who was it today that hit 25 games in their hitting streak?
Oh, shoot.
Someone, I can't remember who it was, but somebody reached 25 games today.
You're right.
So, I mean, already I'd get more excited about that, considering it's almost halfway to, it's 54, right? The magic number? Or is it 56?
56 the record, 57, yeah, to obviously break it.
Okay.
And then, of course, the coincidence in that is the fact that 56 and the 406 average both happened in the same year.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, this is, I'm assuming that no players had gone to war by that point.
No, because...
because DiMaggio and Williams are still there.
By that season, yeah, right. the America yeah. hadn't Williams, entered the war yet.
Williams went, I believe it was 43, 44, and 45, and then he came back. And then in 56 and 7, I believe, is when he went to Korea. I could be wrong about that.
We're in conversation with Ben Christensen from the MLB Fan Cave. I promised Jay that there would be no real math, but there is always baseball math. And you know what? It's funny, Ben. I can wrap my head around baseball math, but it's the only math I can understand.
Same here.
Oh, really?
I'm kidding.
Well, here's some math for you. When Tony Gwynn batted 394 in 1994, he struck out 19 times in 110 games. Think about that for a second. So that's the kind of thing that it's going to take for a guy to do something like that again.
Wow.
Yeah, and the sad reality of when Williams did it in 1941, I believe he had 22 strikeouts for the entire year.
That's incredible.
Wow. Wow, that is, wow. Well, thank you for your...
And Jeter's already at 10, so he's already halfway doomed himself right there.
There you go, and it just a testament to how difficult this is and why the record has stood as long as it has.
27 strikeouts for Ted Williams in 1941.
27.
My goodness.
And then, yeah, actually, Jeter's at 19, and I believe it's 10 walks he's had. So I think I got the numbers backwards there.
That's like striking out every, fifth, sixth game?
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Wow. Wow. Well, that's... Yeah. Our hats are off to him.
And, yeah, exactly.
Jay, I know you know where. This should be filmed, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I said hat, not head. Sorry, Ben.
No, you're fine.
Okay, good. Before we finish off, Ben, you had another video out today. Very quickly, you anointed Mr. Met as the greatest mascot of all time, right?
Yeah. No, it's just of 2012. And that was according to the Davy Brown Index from Forbes magazine. So not necessarily, you know, my decision because I've always, obviously, based on my A's loyalties, I'm a bit of a Stomper fan. But I would still put the Philly Fanatic as...
I don't know Stomper. I do not know Stomper.
Stomper the Elephant? What?
Oh, Stomper the Elephant. That's right. Oh, yeah, for the Oakland A's.
Yes. What?
He's got a big smile on his face, but you know, behind those eyes, he's a cold-blooded killer.
So. Sort of like you, eh, Ben?
Yeah, exactly.
Tell everybody what we can look forward to this week, paying attention to your blog and to your Twitter feed.
So we've got the Abbott Brothers coming in tomorrow, which is
awesome.
A trio, I believe it is. Yeah,
great band. They were just here, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and had a show at the Corona Theater about a week and a half ago, and supposedly it was incredible.
Excellent.
So you're in for a treat.
Oh, I like it. And then I guess we have Mark Mulder and Nomar Garciaparra come by on Wednesday.
Wow.
And that's all I know off the top of my head. Yeah.
Well, that and you'll have some baseball to tweet about.
A lot of baseball.
About. Yeah. Yeah, like 80% of the season.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that was a valid point. I'm thinking more of the immediate future. Sorry.
I really enjoyed your videos this week. I think that's a really cool thing that you're doing, branching out like that. And
I'll have a lot more.
Good. We look forward to seeing them and to your trove of baseball knowledge and passion, Ben. We thank you so much for your time, and we'll be in touch next week.
Anytime. Look forward to it.
All the best.
Take care.
Follow him at Shaka Brody on Twitter. You can even watch a live. a live cam of the Fan Cave off the MLB Fan Cave website. So you can watch them watching baseball while you're watching baseball.
Live cams. And it's this one's not creepy.
No, well.
Well, maybe.
It's a little creepy.
It's a little creepy. And live cams are always creepy. It doesn't matter what they are of. Even a lobby. Never mind.
Oh, I wish you all were here so you could see our faces.
Yeah.
It would make it a lot more fun for you. But hey, we're having a good time and you get to eavesdrop. This is The Kauffman Show. Dave Kauffman, Jay Farrar. When we come back, we'll be joined by David Gourlay from Ottawa Champions Baseball. Welcome back to The Kauffman Show. Dave Kauffman, Jay Farrar. We're going to do a little follow-up right now and bring back a guest who was in studio, what was it, 2 weeks ago, Jay?
Yeah.
I think it was two weeks ago. And it was a wonderful time, actually, to have David Gourlay in and to talk about the future of baseball in Ottawa. And
we need to update. We're going to see what's going on.
That's it. They have a campaign, and it's supposed to end soon, and they're trying to reach a goal of season ticket commitments, not actual... put all your money down, a commitment. And we're going to bring him in right now, David Gourlay from Champs Ottawa Baseball. Hello, sir.
Dave, how are you?
Fantastic. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. Hello, Jay. How are you doing?
Good, great. Good to hear from you.
Before we talk Ottawa Baseball, Dave, many congratulations on what sounded like a wonderful event last week.
Oh, thanks so much.
Yeah,
that's great. It was a lot of fun. I imagine that we will do it again, and your attendance will be mandatory.
Absolutely, I will be there. I was at a work dinner in Toronto, but I was thinking about you and the whole crowd, and what a great cause in honor of Gary.
I can tell our audience that David was tweeting me and text messaging me in the auction for the Aislinn print, and it got very fierce. He did not get it, but he came very close, and a huge thank you to Terry Mosher, to Aislinn. His piece raised over $600.
Wow.
Beautiful
Sarah
print.
Cook Fund.
Beautiful
yeah.
print.
Just gorgeous. And yeah, a wonderful night. And I thank you very much.
My pleasure, Dave. My pleasure.
So get us up to date. We last spoke 2 weeks ago. And
we did.
You told our audience all about what you're trying to do to bring baseball back to Ottawa. Where do we stand today?
We are now less than a week away from the conclusion of the drive. We just passed 2,000 deposits.
All right.
We're looking for 2,500, so it's crunch time. It's now time for our community to close this out successfully, Dave, for the community in Ottawa here to send a very strong and vocal message to the Toronto Blue Jays, to the Eastern League, to minor league baseball, that we're ready to have a team here next year.
And you obviously don't need to be from Ottawa to make this commitment, right?
Not
it doesn't
at all.
It
no.
doesn't mean that you have to sign up for a full season's tickets.
No.
It's a commitment, and you could buy a package of X amount of games if you chose, right?
Well, and absolutely, and that's one of our strategies. Our strategies here is that, you know, people don't have to. This is not just for people in Ottawa. It can be people in Kingston. It can be people in Montreal. It can be people who live in the towns where Eastern League teams are. From a tourist standpoint, from a tourism standpoint, this is a great opportunity for us. So, anybody who loves the game of baseball, who lives anywhere near Ottawa, should be looking at this and should be considering a totally refundable, no risk deposit.
So, what do we do if we wanted to sign up? Where do we go? What do we do?
You go to our website at www.champsottawabaseball.ca, and there's a page there that you can go on, and it's a PayPal site, fully secure. The money goes into an in-trust account. That's the best way to demonstrate your support right now.
Well, I can promise you that you've got my support, and I hope that, there you go, we've got John Kakalakis' support as
Excellent.
Well.
And, Excellent.
And good on you, John. And hopefully I can convince Jimmy and Jay by the end of the
I'm in.
Jay's in.
It's not even a question.
All right, there you go. You've got three. Jimmy, are you in? Jimmy's in. You got four.
Nice. And I get daily reports, so I'm going to be tracking it to see if you guys have signed up. And if you haven't, you know what's going to happen. I'll be calling you.
That's what you call us out on it on Twitter, okay?
See, that's how you get a ball team back. Threats. Threats. That's nobody's hardcore enough. That's the problem in this city.
David Gourlay, when is it? So the announcement will be next.
We're going to have an announcement. We're partnering with Kanata Little League. They're going to be playing a game at 6 o'clock. So just before that, we're going to have a community barbecue. The mayor will be in attendance along with our honorary patrons, some of our charitable and business partners, and we're going to make our announcement on Tuesday, May 15th.
Wonderful. So then, I guess the 21st, you'll join us again and let us know how it all went.
I would love to, Dave. I'd love that very much.
Best of luck to you, David Gourlay, and once again, the website for everybody, please.
It is www.champsottawabaseball.ca.
Best of luck, sir. We're right behind
you. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate that very much.
Have a great night,
guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
There he goes, David Gourlay from Champs Ottawa. Get behind this, people. Ottawa's real close. It'll be nice to go see some AA baseball on a weekend afternoon, won't it?
You drive there and drive back in the same day, it's not a problem. You do it for Ottawa Senators games all the time.
I've done it many times.
Sure.
And way more atmosphere.
Than a shopping mall? Yeah.
And you don't have to drive to Kanata.
Yeah.
It's nice and close. And it's like half an hour left.
There's not one street going in with a traffic light right in the middle of it.
This is the Kaufman Show. Jimmy's got an update for you. And we'll be back with Randy Smith from Fast Forward Films. We'll talk a little bit about the Gary Carter benefit on Thursday. Everything dies, baby, that's a fact. Maybe everything that dies someday comes back. Put your makeup on, fix your hair pretty, and meet me tonight in Atlantic City.
That same pic at home in a frame. Today I got it hanging in my studio office. It's signed God Bless You, the Kid, Gary Carter.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. This was another wonderful moment at the benefit to see your brother Anakin Slade perform this song live.
With Lisa Mackey harmonizing. It sounded beautiful.
Yeah, Lisa was great and really nice, too. It was great to meet her.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
She's swell.
Jay, do I detect a little bit of a crush?
No, not at all. No.
Oh, okay.
No.
You turned a little red.
No. It's the lighting.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I think it's just a girl with a pretty voice.
It is. I have a soft spot for women with pretty voices. What can I say? I've got a pretty one myself, so, you know, it's somebody I can relate with.
Your voice is more handsome than pretty.
Well, thank you, Dave.
Yeah.
Now you're blushing for some reason.
I just want to make sure that I'm going to be allowed on the show next Tuesday.
Okay, good.
Good. So I'm safe?
You're safe.
Phew. All right. Let's bring in our next guest. And I said that with an S at the end of it. Guests. It's Randy Smith and Martin Goudron. They are the co-owners of Fast Forward Films, who so generously donated their time to the benefit for Sarah Cook and for Gary Carter on Thursday night. And they are going to tell us a little bit about their experience for the night and what they're going to be offering to all of the fans who are both in attendance and wish they were. Hello, Randy. Hello, Martin.
Hi, how are you?
We're great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Thanks.
Very good. Thank you.
Good. I'm a lot less stressed out than the last time I saw you both.
You were a little frazzled last time, but it's understandable.
Yeah, there were just, I had a couple of fingers and a couple of, you know, pies or something. I had a lot going on that night.
I think there was a couple of people there who wanted your attention.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? Actually, I can't wait to see your video because I missed so much music that night.
There were some great bands there. There was a lot of people there having a great time. I'm sure you missed quite a few special moments.
Yeah, I did not catch all of the Bride set. I missed a couple of songs from Joseph Kearns. I once it got a little quieter in there, I was able to settle down and enjoy myself a little bit more. End of the night was kind of felt like a private concert for me, to be honest with you.
It was one of a kind concert. It was great.
Yeah, it was a wonderful time. And again, thank you guys so much for taking all the pictures and shooting all the video. And why don't you tell us a little bit about what we're going to be able to expect and where we're going to be able to find it?
Well, we were there all night, and we took photos throughout the evening of the stuff up for auction. We took photos of the bands during the performance. We took photos of the guests who were there throughout the night.
The people also that bought stuff at the auction.
Great.
So what we're going to do is by Thursday evening around 8 o'clock at the latest, we're going to have everything up on our website. And anyone who is at the event who we took a photo of actually got our business card, so they know how to get to the site. But if anyone out there is listening who happened to miss the show, got there late, didn't get a card from us, they can go on our website, www.fastforwardfilms.com. FFWD, Films with an S, and you'll go there, you'll see a video, a highlight of the night, and you'll see all the photos, they'll be numbered, and all you have to do is just contact us via the website and let us know what numbered photos you want, free of charge, and we'll send you a copy.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Yeah, really our pleasure. It was a great event.
We really appreciate it. You guys were so professional, and I recommend, and so does Jay, we recommend your services to everyone and anyone, and I'm very excited that you're going to be hooking up with Joseph Kearns, right?
Yes, we are, actually. We spoke to him today, and we actually contacted him about a half an hour ago. Have not gotten a response yet, but we're looking to go in the studio this week to record.
He's at the pub. Come on, Randy. He's at the pub.
He's probably at the pub. The people who are there might get a lucky performance at him tonight, but so we're going to go in the studio. We're going to lay down three or four tracks. And sometime before he heads back home, we're going to get in there and make a video, too, so he'll be able to get online and people can hear his stuff because he's honestly a once-in-a-generation artist.
Oh, yeah, he was honestly amazing that night, so it's going to be fun.
Amazing, guys. Thank you so much. Next week, once it's back up, will you come back on for a couple of minutes and plug it?
It would be our pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. We really appreciate it. Fast Forward Films, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you. And just really quickly,
yes.
Thank you everyone who donated to the Sarah Cook Foundation, $10,000, a great cause, and it was a pleasure to be associated with us at the honored event.
Thanks so much, guys. Really, I appreciate it so much.
Thank you. Have a very good night, guys.
Randy and Martin from Fast Forward Films, and this is Joseph Kearns, who had two standing ovations at Hurley's Pub.
Brought the house down.
Thank you to our good friend Brian Wilde, introducing us to a real gem.
Credit could I gain, which filled my heart with longing for the lakes of Pontchartrain. I stepped
on. This is the Kaufman Show, and we'll be right back.
Beneath the morning sun, I rode the rods till evening.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. That music means just one thing. And it sounds expensive. It's time for the Kaufman Show legal analyst, Dan Gradinsky from Borden, Ladner & Gervais, that famous, famous firm in downtown Montreal. Are you still in your ivory tower as you speak to us tonight, Daniel?
No. I decided to come on home and speak to you gentlemen this evening.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you. I guess that means you can't bill us for this then.
That's right. This is a freebie, my friend.
Oh, I love it when it's pro bono on the Kaufman Show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty well. And yourself? Have you recovered from the very successful evening last Thursday?
Yeah, you know what? It was I recovered, and then I went to the Pied de Cochon Cabana Sucre with you on Sunday, and it was like a relapse, frankly. I'm still full.
Same here.
It was wonderful, wasn't it?
It was something else.
So before we get down to business, I just want to, and of course, yes, thank you. It was great to have you at the benefit as well. And I was so happy that you were there to rock out with us. And I know we're going to go see the Blushing Brides together. On the basis of how impressed you were with Mo and the boys.
I think I even insisted to you that we were going to have to go and check them out.
And I don't know if you saw my message earlier, but the Detroit Cobras are coming to town, so we're going to have to get our tickets for that, too.
That's great news. I'll be around for that.
All right. Talk to us. Tell us some law stories.
Well, the story we've got this evening is, you've probably heard in the news, it's not a really happy one. This is one of my childhood heroes, actually. Junior Seau, the former linebacker for the San Diego Chargers, shot himself last Wednesday.
Yeah.
Just really, really a tragedy. A 43-year-old guy leaving, obviously, the last couple of years he had played with the Patriots for a bit, and he decided to take his own life.
Finished with my Dolphins, too, didn't he?
He did.
It was, we're the same age. We both grew up watching football in the same era, and I have nothing but wonderful memories of Junior Seau. The guy loved playing football.
I remember he ended up playing, I think, most of a year with a torn bicep that had basically rolled up towards his shoulder.
Oh.
He left his hand above his shoulder at one, his arms are above his shoulder.
Wow.
But this is, it gives you a sense of the kind of the tough guy that he was and the desire he had to play the game no matter what.
Pardon me if I'm not following right now, but how is this a legal issue?
Well, here's the story. The way that he shot himself, firstly, it fits into a chain now. It seems that there's quite a few NFL players who have died of a young age, and a fair amount of them who have suffered depression, and quite a few, unfortunately, who have taken their own life.
Mm-hmm.
Just about 2-3 weeks ago, another former Falcons safety, a guy named Ray Easterling, who's before my time, but he also took his own life. And then Dave Dwersum from the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, that was last year. That was heartbreaking, where he shot himself in the chest because he wanted to donate his brain to the CTE research.
And that's the link, unfortunately. Junior Seau, it seems that he shot himself in the chest. He didn't leave a suicide note or anything, but we can perhaps presume, we don't want to go too far, that he might have done that to make sure that his brain was saved and it could be examined by experts in the field. And what they're looking at, what they found with Dave Dwersum, was that as a young guy, nonetheless, he had something called chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Excuse me.
That's okay. It sounds like a real tongue twister, frankly.
Well, there you go. Yeah. I mean, one way or another, what this is essentially it's a quick way for you to get depression, dementia. It's almost like your brain starts to have small holes in it. And Dave Dwersum had it at a very young age. Mm-hmm. The link with this is that this chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
Let's go with CTE from here on.
Much
in,
better.
All right.
Yeah, the CTE. It's linked with obviously with concussions, and right now there are over 60 lawsuits that have been filed. We've talked about this before, but 60 lawsuits that have been filed by various NFL players who are suing the NFL. And particularly, what's of interest is there's a lawsuit filed by Dave Dwersum's family for wrongful death.
Hmm.
They're saying that the cause of the death is of his suicide can be linked to the NFL and particularly the helmet manufacturer Rydell as well. So that the NFL basically intentionally misled players about the dangers associated with football. They failed to institute better safety measures, and Rydell particularly that they were promising much more than their helmet could actually deliver. Year after year, the damage that it does on the human brain leaves you in a situation like Dave Dwersum was in, apparently, which is that your brain ends up riddled with holes. And as a relatively young man, he was, I believe, in his early 50s, he suffered from serious depression, insomnia, and dementia.
Now, the problem that's going to make this hard to prove, Dan, is that nobody put a gun to anybody's head and said, you have to play football. And I know that's kind of a libertarian view, but, Jay, my libertarian co-host, I think, sees that. And I just don't see that You know, look how hard it is to sue the smoking companies, the cigarette companies. That's something that's a lot more like obvious than it is than playing a sport would be necessary.
Well, here's the thing: the next step, or at least once they get through some of the preliminary matters and the some of those issues that have to be resolved, they next go to what's called the discovery process. And in a lawsuit, what this basically means is one party goes to the other and says, okay, I want, you know, the various types of information that are relevant to the issues before us. So did the NFL have any specific knowledge about the dangers of concussion at a certain time period? Did they know this in the 70s? Did they know this in the 60s? Did they know this in the 80s? Were they not releasing it to the players?
Right.
Did they have the opportunity where they presented with a product that says, look, this is a helmet that will be able to protect you much, much better than what people are currently using. And if the NFL basically refused to implement it, that's something that can be held against them.
Wow. We're in a conversation with Kaufman Show legal analyst Daniel Gurdinsky from Borden Ladner Gervais. I'm going to ask you guys all in the room a question. And there was an article in ESPN this week on ESPN.com that I thought was very interesting. A football writer, and the article was how they will never let their kids play football. Jimmy, would you let your kid play football?
Well, if you really wanted to play, sure, why not?
Jay?
Only after a certain age, not, you know, in their teens, well into their teens.
John?
Yeah, I would have to agree with Jay.
And what? Dan?
I would. I played football as a child, and I quite enjoyed it. It was a great experience, and I think it's a question of sort of learning how to play the game correctly, making sure you have the best possible equipment that you can. You can have to protect yourself to protect your child.
I'm torn on it. Honestly, I'm torn on it. Now, I remember, you know, there came to an age in my hockey playing where my parents didn't want to come because they didn't want to see me get, you know, knocked around silly on the ice. And I don't know how I'd feel watching my kid get laid out by, you know, the version of Junior Seau that he's playing against. I think that's scary, and I understand how important the camaraderie and the team building and all the rest of that and the memories that you get to keep forever, but really, is it worth it to die such a young age? And I'm not implying that everybody who plays football, these guys have taken thousands of hits in their careers and practices and day in and day out from Pop Warner all the way to the Pro Bowl, right? But you know, Junior Seau played 16 years in the NFL, and not once was he diagnosed with a concussion. So if it does come out after an autopsy that he did have CTE, that's saying that the NFL missed 16 years worth of concussions on Junior Seau. That's scary.
Not quite, Dave. It's close there, but I don't necessarily think that means that he had a concussion. It just can. The other question now is whether there's small, repeated shocks. So every time I'm practicing as a lineman and I bang heads against someone else, it might not be a concussion, but it's a sort of micro trauma, whether that can add up to a case of CTE.
Well, that's even scarier.
Well, that's exactly it. There have been some links that are suggested now with soccer. Every time you head a ball, and certainly I'm sure playing once in a while, you probably, you know, headed a ball and said, oof, that hitter hurt a bit more than I want to admit.
Sure.
But that's exactly it. It's whether those small little shots to the head, time after time, whether they add up.
Wow.
That's one of the big questions. If the NFL knew about this earlier on, then that's something that can cause the sport quite a bit of problems. And particularly, in any event, they're losing a public relations battle on this one right now, because there's a suicide of a former player, as popular as Junior Seau is, like this is a serious hit for the league.
It's a very serious hit for the league, Dan, and we can only hope that this is the last piece of bad news that the NFL gets for a little while, because this was a real shock to everybody. I know that when that came across the wires, it was people were very upset. Junior Seau meant a lot to a lot of people, and his smile was infectious.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
I know that as a kid, I'll always have memories of Junior Seau, and, you know, he left everything on the gridiron. He gave it his all, and as my buddy Max said on Twitter afterwards, he played until the wheels fell off.
Yeah, he was one of those guys who wanted to keep playing forever, and that's also some of the problems that some of these guys have when they when they do retire, of course, is that there is, you know, the risk of depression when they basically transition to another life where they don't get the spotlight. They don't get the thrills that they once got in their former profession.
Dan Gradinsky, thank you for your time tonight. You are the Kaufman Show legal analyst. Can you find us something happy and law related next week?
Absolutely, David.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I'll see what we can do.
speak to you soon.
All right. Have a nice evening, gentlemen.
You too.
Is that possible?
happy and
law related?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that there's something out there that he can find. Some sort of legal loophole that allowed something really awesome to happen or something. I don't even know.
Okay.
Just let it be better than that.
Yeah, let anything be better than that. It's a damn shame.
Between Junior Seau and Adam Yauch, it was a rough week for a lot of people that I know.
A lot of people who grew up in the 90s and the 80s. Yep.
I was not the biggest Beastie Boys fan, but I saw them in concert. They were wonderful.
Gotta respect them. They changed a lot of things in the music industry.
And Yauch, especially for his social issues, the takes he took. Anyway, before Dick Wolf finishes playing here, this is The Kaufman Show. We'll be right back. Gradinsky says next week he'll be talking about puppy law. Back to the Kaufman Show. That song always pumps me up. How you doing, Jay?
Good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Ready for our next guest?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Me too. One of the highlights for me from the Gary Carter tribute on Thursday night was seeing this man play in such a small room. It was really wonderful. Not to mention hanging out with him, because he's a super cool dude.
And he was a roadie, too.
Really?
Yeah. You see him pick up Joseph Kern's microphone?
No, you know what? That was one of the highlights that I missed. I heard about. I guess he can tell us all about it. Welcome back to the program, Jeremy Taggart. How are you, sir?
Hello, fellas. How's it going?
We're very good, man. How are you?
I'm good. Are you finally down from the crazy night? It was pretty up there, wasn't it?
It was very special, and I want to thank you again for being a part of it.
Hey.
And Mr. Taggart?
Well, I guess he's angry.
Well, all right. You know what, Jimmy? Let's take a break. Let's start this all over again. This is the Kaufman Show. We'll be right back.
Don't thank anybody, Kaufman. See what happens.
Gave us an excuse to play some Dylan, right, Jay?
Never needed an excuse for that.
All right, let's see if our guest is back. This is what happens, Jay says, when I thank people. Welcome back, Jeremy Taggart.
Hi, guys. Sorry about that.
How are you, man?
I was just about to gush about how incredible the evening was, and not just to the fact that it was great to see, you know, everybody, you know, feeling Gary and. But just to see the love for the Expos and the actual, family feeling, you know what I mean? It felt like everybody was completely related, like really close. And it was just it was weird because it was something like if you were to see like, you know, hardcore Red Sox or Yankees fans, you know, now together, but that person had died. You know, there's just a feeling of that that's very, you know, heartbreaking. And it was just, to celebrate and everybody to be together. It was just you could see how happy everybody was just to just be there and thinking the same thing and having the colors. And it was just it makes you want to get that ball rolling and possibly, you know, have a team again.
Well, the ball is now rolling, Jeremy. I think that there is a spirit in this city that is obvious, and I appreciate that you, as someone who's not from here, was able to see it so clearly. That means a lot to us.
It was super strong, and you know, I mean, the future of Canada is strong, and our economy isn't going anywhere, and you know, you never know. Hopefully, it does.
Fingers crossed, man. I mean, honestly, the way I felt coming out of that, waking up the next morning, was not this was the first step towards getting a ball club back. It was that sense of community, that sense of belonging amongst Expos fans is still alive and never went away, and it doesn't need a ball game to make it happen. You just have to throw a party and do some good, and you know, everybody there felt so good about raising money for a really worthy cause, and it didn't hurt that there was just some incredible music, and by some I mean like 6 hours worth.
Yeah, it was very, very long and fun for sure. I couldn't believe how many bands and how long it ended up going on. It was incredible.
Yeah, I owe a lot of people a lot of favors now, Jeremy. I think I'm in a lot of trouble. I have a feeling I'm going to get a lot of phone calls for a lot of promo and plugging. But it's my pleasure. Every band there was fantastic. And it was great that you came in from Toronto and that Phantom Shores came in from Ottawa. I thought they were fantastic. And really cool to see you playing with Joseph and Noel. That was really, yeah, really neat.
It was fun to play some Johnny Cash with a couple of Irish blokes.
It was very cool. And frankly, for me, the highlight was the end of the night. There was maybe about 15, 20 people left in that room. And
it's too bad. It's really too bad. It wasn't full still, but it was, yeah, that was awesome.
I took a minute long YouTube video of you guys doing the wait just to tease everybody and show them what they missed.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there'll be something else. And you know, there's no reason to get people together and have instruments that shouldn't happen. You know, that's what music is all about.
I couldn't agree more. Watching all of the bands hanging out in that back room and everybody just seemed so impressed with everybody else.
It was like an expo stock.
It was, know, like
it was
expo
an expo stock.
Stock.
Yeah.
So now, Jay,
really
you've seen Jeremy at Woodstock and Expo Stock.
Yeah, that's right. Go. I've seen him at both stocks.
So, but now you're back in Toronto and you're back on the Blue Jays and back on your golf kick, I'd imagine.
I am. I'm actually playing Hamilton Golf and Country Club tomorrow, which is hosting the Open this year.
Oh my!
And, I'll be able to let you know how it's rolling because the Open's in a couple of months' time. So,
well, that's kind of exciting. Have they announced the field yet? Any of the major guys, major? You know what? He's not even so major anymore. But do you think Tiger will come back to Canada?
I doubt. Well, you never know, maybe. But it, because it's right after the British still, it's still a lot of players are kind of looking at it as a break. But there's still, I mean, the strength of the actual RBC and the fact that it's the number one sponsor now for the PGA Tour. And they still have their six players, including Luke Donald, you know, so that could definitely affect the field, you know, I think, and because it's on a great course. When it's on a nice course in Canada, they show up. Like, they showed up, there was a good, pretty good strong field for Shaughnessy last year.
That's the one in Vancouver, right?
Yeah, and you can always tell the difference, you know. If it's on a nice, classic track, players show up, and this is a definite an example of that with Hamilton, a Harry Colt classic.
I remember reading about a month ago that they're waiting to announce, but the Montreal, Royal Montreal will be getting another Canadian Open, and it's about damn time.
Well, as it should, with the great beacon Denzel Palmer at the helm there. I mean, he's kind of one of the ambassadors for golf in Canada. You know, he brought that first, he brought the first WGC events, and obviously the President's Cup, and
right.
And in the future is very bright for golf in this country because of people like Denzel at Royal Montreal.
You ever play in this neck of the woods, Jeremy?
I have played Royal Montreal and a few other beautiful courses in your area, and it's just as lucky as we are in Toronto, definitely.
Yeah, there's just Canada in general, the golf courses across this great country. It's amazing how many Canadians golf, considering how much snow there is. I think we have a higher per capita than anywhere in North America or anywhere in the world, really.
It's similar to baseball, where you have I guess with Montreal, with the history of baseball there, it's golf is the same. Like, you have the really hardcore golf people like the George Knudsons, or people like me who are massive fans of Stanley Thompson golf design. So I'm always trying to play them. So, I mean, they're scattered all across this whole country, from PEI all the way to Victoria with Stanley Thompson courses. So there's just a huge deep-rooted history in this country, as well as, you know, I think it being the bridge to the home of golf in the UK and in Scotland. You know, a lot of those designers were friends with Canadian designers back in the turn of the century.
Do you golf with mediocre golfers, or should I not ask you to go golfing next time I'm in Toronto?
Always. I golf with anybody. That's what's great about golf. It's about the personality, not the game, you know. And if you're good, that's fine. But if you're crummy, then you just pick the ball up once in a while. You know, that's the way it works.
I struggle to break 100, but I have a great time whenever I'm out there. And I've got a couple of friends who are incredible golfers, and I'll go out with them, and I can't believe how mad they get at themselves. You know, it's like you're going to shoot an 83. Who cares if you got a bogey here? And they beat themselves up. I've seen guys throw clubs. I've seen them act like Tiger Woods. And I just don't understand it. It's such a wonderful way to spend time. And I guess the better you get at it, the more you expect out of yourself. But I'm still having fun out there.
It is, you know, and I still enjoy it. I mean, I think it's one of those things where it's between your ears, you know, and it's, mm-hmm. it's, you can always go to the range and hit it one way and then go on the course. And to score on a golf course is tough. And that's a difference between, you know, hitting golf ball after ball. It's just, that's why Tiger's not playing as well as he used to. And I think why that era has kind of passed, where he's come to the conclusion where he's trying to find something where in the past it was just happening and he was enjoying it. You know, you can tell that with Rory McIlroy. It's like, if he has a bad week, it doesn't really faze him because he's always there. Where Tiger, it looks like, oh, I fixed all those problems, and now the new me is here, and I'm going to win again. And then he doesn't. And then it's like, it just makes it that much worse.
I can't imagine the pressure that he puts upon himself. And I mean, I imagine that he always did, but just to be faced with doubt as a professional athlete, or really anybody that's in the spotlight, it just messed, like you said, it's between the ears, and it just must make things so difficult.
Well, I think Jack Nicklaus kind of said it best when, you know, he mentioned that once it's gone, it doesn't come back like it used to. It only comes back in flashes. And I think Tiger has to accept that it's not the way it was. And it's happened with every great champion where it does end the way they played, you know. I think there's an acceptance, and you see it with Tom Watson. You saw it with Johnny Miller, you see with Nick Faldo. It's like there's an inherent change, and when that's consistent, and it is, it's like, think about it. He's, you know, it's been almost 5 years now since the last major, and
wow,
and you know, 6 years now. It's getting to the point where it there's no, he's back, because, you know, he would have won a couple since, or, you know, some big tournaments since 2008 or whatever it is, you know.
But for as short as people's memories normally are, Jeremy, you know, I close my eyes and it's 96 again, and he's lapping the field at the Masters.
Yeah.
And it's weird to think that. No, but it's, I mean, it's a lifetime when you think about what happened American Thanksgivings ago.
Well, and not to mention that he's, you know, 37, and he works out the lives of three people. You know, the guy lifts so much weight, and he's almost like an NFL athlete the way he walks already, you know, and that's not normal or healthy for someone who thinks they're going to win 18 majors, you know.
Yeah, and yet
you know.
But for so long, everybody sort of thought that was the conventional wisdom of where golf was headed, and that you had to suddenly be this muscle-bound guy in order to play like Tiger. And
well, that's in his own mind. He created that. You know, I don't know where that came from other than him. I mean, I don't remember anybody needing muscles to, other than being as healthy as you possibly can be. You know,
and even then, you see some exceptions on the golf course.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
And of real competitive guys too. And again, it's about that clear, that focused head, that, you know, being sort of zen, I guess.
Golf is more of a question of dexterity. Would it not be, instead of being all muscle and power? I mean, well, you see the rest of the field; they're not in good shape. These guys.
Well, no. There's mostly they're in good shape. It's just they're athletes. I mean, even if it's a bigger guy, say somebody like a John Daly, who is all talent. You know, at the end of the day, it's like you see hockey players that don't really care, and they got an extra couple pounds, or remember Charles Barkley? It's like those are still athletes. You know, those are still people that understand, you know, how to use their body to get something, to hit it something at distance. And I think with the working out now, I think people are just seeing it as a preventative to injury. You know, and that's just, it makes way more sense.
I also remember Mo Vaughn, and I especially remember Oliver Miller in that ugly Raptors uniform back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
What about Sean Kemp later on in his career?
You have that many, you have 40 children, it's going to show.
Oh, man. I don't think he had them himself, though, Dave. Did he?
Oh,
okay.
So, Jer, I saw on the Our Lady Peace website that you guys have a pretty cool Canada Day show coming up.
Yeah, we're heading to London, England for Trafalgar Square to do Canada Day there. That'll be really cool.
Is that a free show in Trafalgar Square?
Yeah. There's a bunch of other Canadian people coming. I'm not sure who's hosting it, but Shad will be playing as well, who's a great rapper.
Oh, his music video, the one that that parodies the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, is fantastic.
Yeah. He's super talented. So, I mean, it'll be fun. It'll be a gas. And then we're doing a club show at the O2 Academy on the day after. So
you're going to stick around and catch some Olympics?
No, I'm going to be heading back because we actually will be doing some shows back in Canada again. So
good.
Not too far after. Yeah.
Come to Montreal. People love you guys here.
We will. Maybe not in the next couple of months, but we'll be there sooner.
Good.
Sooner than later, for sure.
And I'd imagine that even sooner than that, you'll be back on with us talking some golf and some baseball.
Absolutely. We got the Players coming up here.
You'll have to fill us in.
Yes.
Because we might be, I don't know, a little distracted during that.
Yeah, we'll be watching the Blue Jays. You can be our golf guy.
I think you'll be watching some NHL playoffs, or you guys don't care anymore.
I care absolutely. I find it very exciting. I can't watch a full season of awful regular season hockey and then not get excited about seeing better hockey.
The Montreal Expos of the NHL are about to eliminate the Nashville Predators over here,
which
so.
I'm over the moon about. By the way, I love that Phoenix is hopefully going to be able to parlay this into staying. Because
that is, yeah.
I feel for the fans out there, and I know that there's a lot of people in Quebec and in Quebec City especially that probably really hate me right now for saying that, but you don't want to do to another fan base what was done to you. It's such bad karma.
Yeah, well, but, you know, let's hope it's just a bunch of hockey transplants from Canada that are upset, you know, as opposed to people that, you know, it is Arizona. There's
right.
an element of reality that has to be
right.
accepted there, you know. This, you know, the fact that it happened is a mirage to begin with. Like, hockey in the desert, okay. Wait a second, wasn't there hockey here a minute ago? No, that's gone now.
That's happening in Atlanta right now.
Yeah, for sure.
And happened there 30 years ago as well.
Right.
Bring it to Canada, trip of the prophets.
Well, that is one thing. Whatever they're called when they come to Quebec City, and whoever it is, you know it's going to be a financial bonanza. It's going to be amazing.
It will be just as big as Winnipeg.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know what? I guess they won't be there because it doesn't look like Phoenix is going to be moving to Quebec next year. But I love that Colisée. It reminds me of the Forum and makes me happy when I'm in there. And I know it kind of smells like pee, and I know it kind of looks like it's going to fall down on you. But
it's a nice spot. We opened for the Stones there one time.
At the Colisée?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. In the round.
Wow.
That was bizarre.
Blowing my mind, Jeremy. That's
we had our tour book there, and Mick was like wanted to do a Quebec show, and instead of like bumping us, they just like had us open for them.
That's,
how rock and roll is that?
That's pretty rock and roll. Well, the first time I saw you in concert was opening for the Stones in Ottawa.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was probably just after that, because the first time ever, I believe, was the Colisée there.
Yeah, well, I'd say you're bragging, but frankly, I'm enjoying every second of
it. I am bragging.
Jeremy Taggart, thank you so much for your time tonight. Check out their new album. It is called Curve. It is fantastic, and it is available in record stores as well as on iTunes. And critically acclaimed. Everybody loves it. Congratulations.
Thank you very much, fellas, and I can't wait to see you guys soon.
Yeah, we will definitely make it happen over the summer. All the best, Jer, and we'll be in touch.
Okay, see you, fellas.
And thanks again. Bye. There he goes, Jeremy Taggart from Our Lady Peace, who was one of the guests of honor at our wonderful concert on Thursday night at Hurley's Irish.
He's such a laid-back dude. And it's so funny, while he was talking about the golf, he just doesn't strike me as a guy who plays golf. It's just, I don't know.
Oh, I can see it. I think he has the perfect demeanor to be out there
really?
On the golf course. Yeah.
I don't know, with the ponytail and the kind of laid-back, hey, dude, manner, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, but I can't think of a better approach to life and golf.
Yeah.
I
hope more guys in the future who play golf are more like him.
You know what, Jay? I think you'd be surprised. I think the amount of time you've spent around golf courses have been the stuffy golf courses, and you have a preconceived notion of what a golfer is.
Yeah, okay.
And
I'm racist against golfers. I am. I totally am. I judge them completely from beginning.
I don't think it's as elitist as it used to be.
Nah.
Well, I mean, I play, so isn't that proof enough?
That's true. All right, fine.
And Taggart plays. Isn't that proof enough?
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. Maybe you guys are starting to change my mind about it. Not that I'm going to play it ever again. Well, I will, but still. Anyway.
Jimmy, we've got a few minutes before you've got to do an update. So, I don't know. Why don't we talk for a couple more minutes and throw out the phone number?
Sorry, I was enjoying that.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
514-790-0990, 1-866-896-2546 is the long-distance number. And we're going to take a phone call.
Yes.
Sorry, it's a phone call. That's what they call that,
a
right?
A phone call.
All right. We've got our friend the chef in Montebello. Good evening, Andrew. How are you, sir?
How am I? My goodness, you guys are talking golf. My favorite sport, so don't judge golfers.
That's right, Jay.
Sorry. Where's George Carlin when I need him?
There you go. I'm just kidding, dude. Yeah. But if you can send up my Twitter handle to Mr. Taggart, I live and work next to Stanley Thompson Golf Course here in Montebello.
Oh, well, why don't you send him the message yourself on Twitter at Taggart7, TAGGART, and then the number 7.
Perfect, buddy. Okay, I've got that.
That's awesome. I'm sure he'll appreciate hearing that.
And where do I start from, except to thank you, Dave, and all the wonderful people who made for like such a special evening the other night of great memories, great music, great food. The staff at Hurley's, I mean, they're all keepers. I mean, seriously.
Huge thank you to Rod Appleby, the manager at Hurley's Irish Pub, who and to Bill, of course, to Bill Hurley, who...
They were running around as much as you were,
Kaufman. They sure were. Rod worked his tail off on this.
He really did, and I know his pain, believe me.
Yes, and I met both gentlemen, and they're just an exceptional men. Mr. Hurley actually, he signed my baseball.
Did he?
Yep, yeah, well, he did.
That's awesome.
I was the 8-year-old running around trying to get everybody's autograph.
Yeah, that was great. I couldn't believe it. I think that's the first and last autograph I'll ever sign in my life.
Seriously, it was actually the first time I ever in my life asked people for an autograph because I knew this was going to be such a special evening and I just wanted to cherish every moment of it. My girlfriend actually said she had never, ever seen me so happy and so giddy. He said, you look like a 14-year-old running around asking people for their autographs.
That's great.
And seriously, meeting your brother, Jay, finding out what a great first name he has, meeting your dad and finding out what an incredible first name he has.
Yeah, isn't that great? Perfect, huh?
It was great. One of my highlights was actually meeting Katie Hines.
Yeah, isn't she a special lady?
She is. I was nervous to go up and talk to her, and I said, well, which one, where is he? And then you pointed her out, Dave, and I went up to her, and I told her how much I loved the speech she gave the evening that Gary passed away. Then I jumped on afterwards. She actually had heard me, And that's when I pulled my baseball out. And I sort of asked her, Katie, would you mind signing this for me? And she actually lost it. She started crying. And everybody at her table was sort of looking at me and says, okay, what's this jerk doing here on the side? And they said, what are you doing? And I sort of mentioned to them like what was going on. And they all started hugging me. So you just don't realize how happy she is right now, that someone would take the time for such a huge fan that she is. And I was just giddy anyways. But it was a highlight of my night. And Joseph Kearns, my God, he brought the place down.
Holy moly, eh?
Big time. Like, seriously, the blushing blind, everybody was actually very, very, very good. The intensity was great. Different styles of music. The Blushing Brides, they blew me away, and I had seen them a lot. And I remember that I saw them and where I actually had seen them before, which was pretty cool as well.
Where was it?
Here, in St. Andre. They came in one night, and they did this the cover for the Stones, and then I realized afterwards that, hey, that wasn't that long ago that I had actually seen them. I think it was made 13 or 14 years ago.
Okay, I was gonna ask if Trudeau was prime minister at the time.
No, he wasn't.
I had a bunch of people that they hadn't seen the Brides in concert since they were 16, and they were blown away. And you know what? It's just like seeing the Stones now. They're just as good as they were back in the day. And Maurice really personifies Jagger. He's incredible at it.
It's uncanny, seriously. Even when he gets off the stage and lets the band play and the way the poses that he was taking. and a few of those pictures. And I was happy to hear that finally there's someone who's going to, we're going to have a chance to see some of these pictures through the fast forward group that was talking earlier that did all the filming and stuff like that.
Yeah, they just tweeted at me. So you can follow them. It's FFWD Films on Twitter. And they said that they'll be announcing on Thursday the website and all the information and where to go and what to do. And we'll bring them back on next week to talk about it as well.
Well, as Mr. Tiger was saying, this is something we should actually do more than just once when someone dies. I know I won't be able to make it down for when everybody's in with Cromarty and all the boys. I'll be busy at work, but it was just a great evening. I wanted to thank everybody once again. Everybody was just, it's so cool. I have never, ever seriously been in an atmosphere at a place that I had never been to before. I felt like everybody was a brother, a cousin, a friend, a fan. It couldn't have felt any better, guys. I just want to thank you once again.
Andrew, thank you so much for being there. It was, from the second that you heard my voice and went, hey, Dave,
I
recognize
that voice.
He did
the same thing to me, too.
How cool is that?
He said he recognized me by my voice.
Well, that's it. I mean, I've never met you guys before, and I had, Twitter pictures aren't that great anyways.
Well, I'm glad you aren't creepily Facebooking our photos either, so that made me feel a lot better about it.
Chef, thanks so much, and it was a pleasure meeting you. We can't wait to get out to Montebello and taste your food.
Yeah, we're going to come down there, buddy.
Well, dude, you know where the place is, and you've got the card, so I'm just waiting for you anytime you guys want. And bring your golf clubs. We'll have some fun. And, Jay, we'll initiate you into the golf the proper way.
Awesome.
All the way.
Thank you, sir.
Take care, guys.
This is The Kaufman Show. On the other side of the break, we'll be joined by Jeff Pullman, Mystery Ball 58. Going to go back to 1958.
That's when golf was elitist, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good.
Oh, yeah. Neither of us were allowed on the course in 1958.
I had to get my one shot in. Yeah, you and I both weren't. I'm too Greek and you're way too Jewish. It ain't happening.
This is The Kaufman Show. And we'll be back. Back to The Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, we got Jimmy G here pushing the buttons. John Kakalakis making us sound good.
He's our Scotty.
Jimmy or John?
No, John. John in the engineer room. Jimmy's our Spock. He's sitting behind the board. He's our science officer.
You know,
John has the Greek accent instead of the Scottish accent.
This is a whole level of geekiness that I'm not familiar
That's
with.
Cool, man. Oh, come on. It's general knowledge. I'm not getting into dilithium crystals and stuff. Oh, I just outed myself. All right, never mind.
my
Can I be cool again? I hated golf a minute ago. That was cool.
Well, let's just, you know, let's shift this to a geek realm that I'm a lot more familiar with.
Okay.
And let's talk a little Strat-O-Matic baseball with our next guest.
Here we go.
Yeah, that's right. Trust me, Jay, if you sent the girls away just now with that last comment, I'm bringing them right back in.
Yeah.
Our next guest has one of the coolest things I've really ever seen on the internet. It's called Mystery Ball, or the newest incarnation of it is Mystery Ball 58. And wow, the brain on Jeff Pullman, the originality. And I can't wait to have him on the show. And here he is. Jeff, welcome to the program.
How you doing, guys?
We're fantastic, and I'm absolutely loving this Mystery Ball 58. Maybe you could explain to our listeners what you've done, this world that you've created.
Well, it's actually the fourth blog of this type I've done. As you've mentioned, I am definitely a Strat-O-Matic fanatic, and been playing the game for a very long time. Probably started when I was about 8 years old, and I was playing so many full season replays that I decided, why don't I try, and I had other experience in writing stories and movie scripts and stuff, so, why don't I just try something, do something creative with my obsessive hobby? So I began doing these, I began a blog. The first one I did was 1924. I took the 1924 season and replayed it in Strat-O-Matic and told the story through these fictitious characters. The main character was a 17-year-old Phillies fan who went to see all the games at Baker Bowl, the old Baker Bowl in Philadelphia. And the American League stories were told by a Detroit Tigers beat reporter named Cal Butterworth. And I just alternated the two of them. And I did that blog probably every day back in 2009. And I got a lot of good feedback and ended up whittling it down early this year and had it published as a book. So you can buy this book on Amazon. It's called 1924 and You Are There. And that's what the first one. And the second one I did was 1977. It was called Play That Funky Baseball. And for this one, though, I had a lot more fun because what I did was I was able to collect a whole bunch of pretty well-known baseball writers, bloggers from around the country, and have them absentee manage the teams, where they gave me lineups versus lefties and righties and five-man pitching rotations. And then I just played the season and watched what happened.
And this included Montreal's own Jonah Carey managing the Expos, right?
That was correct. Jonah Carey managed the Expos. It was 77, so it was a year or two before they were really good.
Right.
But they still had Carter and Valentine and Dawson, and they were great, and Steve Rogers. But they didn't have really enough pitching depth, and they were probably about, 10 games under 500. I didn't use all the teams. I used, the eight best teams in each league to keep it a little more competitive. And the Kansas City Royals ended up beating the Pirates in the World Series. Really, really exciting seven-game World Series. So I had a kind of a strange story wrapped around that season, too, involving people at a mental institution, which I won't go into here. It came out kind of like a quasi-neo-science fiction thing. And
And also in the 1924 one, you have the Phillies go on strike, and they're replaced by a Negro League team for a week, right?
Correct. This is correct.
So, yeah, you really...
That really is science fiction.
a good friend of mine, Scott Simkus, developed the Negro League card set for Strat-O-Matic Baseball, which is a fantastic product. Just to get the, you've got weather and ballpark factors for, the parks that the Kansas City Monarchs played in.
Wow.
And it's just great. And I wanted to use that. Part of the reason I used it was because my seasons were... I didn't really have pennant races going. The Washington Senators were kind of mopping up the American League, and the Pirates were mopping up the National League. And so I kind of injected them into the story to kind of make it, you know, a lot more interesting, and I think it worked pretty well. And then that was kind of the theme of my third one, which I did last year. I did a short one. I called it a blogella, and it was only ran about 6 months. And I basically took the Negro League set, all of the players, divided them up into, I think it was five teams, and then I took a 1941 All-Star team of all the major leaguers, you know, Ted Williams, Jimmy Fowler, I mean, like everybody who was DiMaggio. Everybody was great that year.
And, you know, we were just talking about that year about an hour ago with another guest. And
you're kidding.
No, we were talking about 400 and talking about 56 and, you know, all these wonderful things that happened in that year before everybody went off to war.
Yeah. 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 Robert Creamer wrote a great book on that, Baseball in 41. But, yeah, so I did was take the All-Stars from 1941 and put them against the five Negro League teams.
Wow.
And it was very, very competitive. The white players did not win, but it was a lot of fun. And that was kind of a reverse history blog. It was called the Bragging Rights League. That ran last year. Now this year I'm doing, it's a film noir, kind of a film noir murder mystery set in San Francisco in 1958, the first year the Giants and Dodgers were out there. And the main character is a guy named Snappy Drake, who is a ballpark usher at Seal Stadium. And at the very, very, very first opening day game, when the fans are filing out, he finds a dead body in his section covered with peanut shells and Royal Crown Cola. And that kind of starts the story going.
And there are some interesting, sort of side stories in there. You talk about Candlestick Park or Candlestick Point at that point, because there isn't a Candlestick Park, and they're talking about that being the place where it's going to be built. There's all these other side stories, and really the Strat-O-Matic is almost placed in the background in it. Like,
oh yeah, no, Strat-O-Matic is it's a great game. I love it. It's used. I basically use it. It's kind of used as a tool, you know, to do the replay. And to do, you know, as kind of a jumping off point for the stories, just to try to, you know, do something a little more different with this thing. I mean, I first started doing these replays, writing about them. There was a great site called Strat Fan Forum, and I was doing, I was starting to talk about my replays there. Everybody writes about their stuff there, and I don't know, I just enjoyed it, and I got some good feedback just on my little blurbs about the game. So then at that point I said, well, let me try take this one step further.
Well, it's such an original idea. It's something so different, and the fact that it's not just, you know, a box score from a game that you played on your couch by rolling dice. You've created this whole sort of other realm and other world, and it's really fun to dive into as a baseball fan.
Yeah, great. I'm glad you like it. I actually have a pretty good connection with the Expos in Montreal. For 5 years, '78 through '82, I was the arts editor at the Vermont Vanguard Press in Burlington, Vermont, which is a kind of a weekly alternative newspaper.
Oh, so you were here for the glory years then?
Oh, I was there, and I was at many games. Because it was about a 2-hour drive for us to drive up to see the Expos. And we would be doing that, and also on the way back, we would be, you know, smuggling 12 packs of Molson Brador over the border.
Yeah, things don't change.
Things don't change. Yeah. They still make that, by the way.
Which Molson? Which one?
Brador?
No, they don't.
Oh, because that was it. I don't remember what the alcohol level was, but it was something that, you know.
That's why they don't make it.
But it that was something. But anyway.
And what was your connection? You tweeted something about Donald Sutherland the other day.
Yes. A strange Donald Sutherland connection. You know, I went to a bunch of the Expos games. I went to three or four playoff games in 1981. I was at the Rick Monday home run game, unfortunately. I used to see Donald Sutherland, you know, down there in the box. He was like the Jack Nicholson of the Expos.
Right.
And he was down there with his big trench coat and sitting next to the visitor's dugout, I think, on the third base side. And so I'd see him down there a lot. It was kind of fun, you know. And then a couple years later, or 82, I moved out to Los Angeles here, mostly to write movie scripts. And I wrote about 20 of them. and I had two of them produced, two low-budget thrillers. And there's one that Miramax produced in, like, 1993, had Donald Sutherland as the star. It was just like a bizarre quirk of fate, Donald Sutherland and Amy Irving. It's called Benefit of the Doubt. And you can look for it. It's hard to find.
It's back when Miramax was actually an independent film company.
That's right.
As opposed to now, yeah.
That's right. That's right before Pulp Fiction,
That's right. Yeah.
Way before Pulp Fiction. Well, maybe not that.
No,
but
like
a year before.
Yeah.
And
that's the point where they went to the whole wall. Mr. Weinstein became God in Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
Right. He wasn't God yet. But and the movie, you know, didn't turn out too well. I wrote the original draft, and then, you know, it had like six producers on it, and they kept bringing in more people and, you know, changing things. So by the time it was done, it was hardly mine, but I did get a credit, and it was reviewed on Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel reviewed it on their show, and Siskel called it 2 hours of sleaze. I feel very, very honored.
Yeah, can we?
Hey, listen, he talked about it. That's
exactly
the point, right? Any kind of recognition is good recognition.
That's right.
Don't worry, he got his, Jeff.
Oh, geez, Kaufman.
Jeff Pullman, thank you so much for your time tonight. We really appreciate it. I look forward to you update this every Monday, right?
Actually, it's 3 days. It's 3 days a week.
Oh, is it?
Wednesdays and Fridays.
Awesome.
And it's mystery58.wordpress.com.
And on Twitter, you are at mysteryball58, right?
Mysteryball58. Yes.
Mysteryball58. Follow him. He tweets about all kinds of sports. Loves hockey. Hates basketball. Fun guy to follow.
don't hate basketball. I hate the NBA. I have problems with
Fair that. Enough. Fair enough. We'll test you on March Madness next year.
All right, sirs.
Jeff, thanks so much for sticking around and coming on the show tonight. We appreciate it, and we'll be in touch.
Thanks for having me on.
All the best.
Bye.
There he goes. Jeff Pullman, Mysteryball58. Check it out. mystery58.wordpress.com.
And that's the appeal to Stratomatic.
It's great.
Well, as opposed to what you were talking about before when you were talking about video games and how that was our generation. Well, Stratomatic leaves something to the imagination, which makes it a little bit more stimulating to the mind. You get to think about it, but in your own way. Sure, it gives you the results, but it leaves a lot to the imagination, which makes it a lot more fascinating to me instead of it being played out right in front of you.
There's a pull to it. There's an absolute pull to it. And I love the idea that it's not just, you know, I rolled the dice and Willie Mays did this. It's this whole other world that he has created. And I'm totally into it. I'm a fan.
Yeah. I won't be playing anytime soon, but...
No, but I'll be reading. I'll be reading this living vicariously through it.
I've been actually reading it during the interview. I was quite fascinated with it.
I desperately want him to do a 94.
I was going to ask that. Yeah. I didn't get a chance, but...
Yeah, all day long I said, I got to ask about 94. I got to ask about 94.
And, yeah.
Well, sure. Gene Siskel just ruins it all, eh?
But in the 94, give it an ending. Give it an ending.
Well, of course. Yeah, yeah. Not August 12th. Cross your fingers.
Yeah, and it just ends.
Let's go back to the phones, 514-790-0990. This is the Kaufman Show, and we've got John in Denver, Colorado. Hello, sir.
Hi, Dave. Hey, Jay, can I get your autograph?
Absolutely.
Yay!
Absolutely. Where do you want it?
I don't care.
Okay.
I think he wants it sent to Denver.
Sent to Denver, yes. Okay.
I want it FedExed with about $50. Would you sign a check for me?
Yeah.
Your money's worth more than ours.
Good
right?
luck with it. Yeah.
Dave, first of all, I want to congratulate y'all on just what I heard was a fantastic event. I read that article.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, you earned it, man.
I appreciate that.
You should do that every year, seriously.
I agree. And as long as we can do something where we can raise a lot of money for something like the Sarah Cook Fund or the Sarah Cook Fund again, then I think that I'll definitely do something next year. Yeah, there you go.
As well you should.
All right.
Now, second, it looks like my travels may be bringing me up there. So what are we all going to do for fun?
You can go golfing if you want.
Well, that's nice. But what about that advertisement y'all had in the last break? That sounded kind of fun, too.
I was...
We were discussing.
That's right. We were strategizing. What was the ad for?
Well, we can't advertise that stuff in Colorado. Let me put it that way.
Was it a strip club?
Strip club, absolutely. Ah.
You're not allowed to advertise a strip club on the radio in Colorado.
Or the head shops.
Well, I don't think there are any head shops advertising on the radio in this town.
No.
Oh, well, I don't know. See, I only get your guys' show and barely in America at this point. I have to call in and sit on hold all night to listen to it.
No, wait. So you want to come and dance at a strip club when you're in town? That's your goal?
Oh, hell no. Nobody wants to see that. No, we're going to go party, get shicker.
I'm sorry?
Shicker? Is that shicker. What? Is that how is you that feel another, before you're better?
Yeah, is that another extinct Molson beer? Or what
no, that? No, no. You of all people should know that, Dave. It's Yiddish.
Oh, yeah, I should so know that. you obviously know me very well, John. And
that's about the only Jewish. I'm not.
Dave is eating
Jewish,
bacon right
Jewish.
Now, okay?
I'm Jewish. I just had a bacon wrapped scallop for dinner.
Yeah.
That sounds just delicious, like my friend. All right, well, before I alienate the rest of the west side of the city, what's going on?
I spend most of my time. Yeah, I don't know where I was going with that one.
When will you be in town, John?
I'm not sure yet.
Okay, so once you do, we'll book the club. We'll book the VIP room, or the champagne room, right?
Hey, maybe if I'm there on Monday, co-host?
I have one, and he's awesome.
Jay, you could take a night off. You deserve a vacation.
I do. Well, okay, great. Agreed. You have no idea what Dave's face looks like right now.
I'm picturing sitting in the studio for 3 hours trying to not lose my mind. Yeah.
It didn't work when I was on the air in Denver.
No.
That's why I say was on the air.
No. Oh, no.
Well, thankfully, you haven't done anything to take you off the Canadian airwaves permanently.
Yes.
You continue to... have our papal blessings to join once a week. See, that's how Jewish I am. I just gave you a papal blessing.
Hey, I'll take it.
Thanks for the call, John.
Oh, wait, I was actually at a sports take.
Well, you know, you got to get to it.
Enough with the strip clubs already,
to
buddy.
It.
All right.
Did you guys get the big fight? Did you guys watch that? The Cotto
Mayweather
fight?
I did watch the Mayweather Cotto fight. Yes.
Oh, man, I hate Mayweather. I am not a fan of him.
Why do you hate Mayweather?
He's a wuss. Fight Pacquiao.
Well, do you think that really has a possibility of happening?
No, because Mayweather will find some little contractual snafu to avoid it.
Do you think that he's in a position to be fighting Pacquiao? Or do you think Mayweather is at the twilight of his career? Which
so
is what
Pacquiao,
most people...
for that matter. What well, if Pacquiao's getting ready to be the prime minister of the Philippines?
Okay.
No, sir, he's a member of Parliament.
Yeah, fight, then it becomes like an international incident.
All right. Well, you know what? Most people are saying that it'll never happen, no matter what kind of money they throw at these guys. Pacquiao, I think, would be up for it. Mayweather, I don't think it'll ever happen. There's more of a chance of him coming to the ring with Justin Bieber. Wait a minute.
Yeah. That was the most bizarre posse I've ever seen come out to a fight. 50 Cent, Bieber.
Triple H.
Oh, that's right. Triple H was there.
Believe
God.
Me. Mayweather.
I believe that's a sign of the coming apocalypse.
Yeah.
That and the fact that the Baltimore Orioles are in first place.
Yes, that too. The only thing that would be more bizarre, I don't know. Let's say the Winnipeg Jets or Phoenix Coyotes win the Stanley Cup, which may actually happen.
No,
year.
The thing that would guarantee that the world is ending is if the Colorado Avalanche moved to Quebec City. John, thank you for the call
tonight.
Don't
threaten me with that, man.
Have a good night, man.
No, you won't be able to go to sleep.
Well, you got a little bit more Kaufman show to lull you. We'll try and bore you to sleep. Have a good
one,
buddy.
All right, guys. Talk to you next week. Have a great night.
All the best. Whew. Got to catch my breath after that.
Well, every week we have to have the creepy segment of the show, shouldn't we?
Yeah, we should get it sponsored.
By Shea Perret.
Yeah.
No, maybe not.
Let's go back to the phone. 514-790-0990. It is the Lucky Charm, George in St. Lazare. Hello, sir.
Hey, Dave and Jay, how's it going?
Good, buddy. How are you?
All I could say after Thursday night was, it's a family affair. It's a family affair. I don't want Jay's signature. I want the Farrar secret to attracting beautiful women. That's what I want.
I have no idea what you're talking about, George.
All I know is I saw Andrew surrounded by beautiful women, and then I see Jerry surrounded by beautiful women. I stopped Andrew and I said, what's the secret? What's the Farrar secret?
It's called charm, wit, intelligence, and the ability to buy people beers.
You know, I stood there for a second, and through all that euphoria, and I was just concentrating on Dave Kaufman. Dave Kaufman looked like a little boy in a toy shop, just looking around, surrounded by all that expo love. Oh, my God, it was amazing. It was such a great time had by all. I knew that it was time for me to leave the place when I started calling Jeremy Paggard Jeff.
Well, hopefully at that point your son drove you home.
Yeah, well, actually, that was one of the reasons why I brought my designated driver with me, so that was cool. And I would have liked to have stayed a little bit longer, but it's a long track back to St. Lazare, and we had it there in the morning. But I just wanted to call you guys up and commend you on a great evening, a job well done. I'm glad to see that the pictures that we put up there collected a reasonable amount of money.
Oh, more than that. I
was kind of surprised with that, actually, Dave. You know, at one moment I saw Melnick and John Barrett trying to bid themselves on that picture with Gary Carter and Charlie Lee after the no-hitter. It's just kind of a rare picture.
Yeah, I love that photo.
And I got to meet Katie, too, which was great, you know, and I said, you know what, every time I see you on that video, I said, I feel like crying. She says, I'm always crying.
Aww.
But I'll tell you one thing, okay?
Oh, hold on, though. Didn't she look beautiful on the front page of the sports section on Saturday?
Absolutely. You know what? I opened up that Saturday paper, and the first thing that I saw was her, and I said, wow. The only thing that I would have changed is, you know, the title of that article should not have been Keeping the Expo Spirit Alive. It's The Expo Spirit Shall Never Die, because I'm telling you, it was so evident that night.
Who needs baseball when you've got Expos fans, right?
Well, I'll tell you something. It felt, honestly, like you were discussing with somebody earlier. It actually felt like you were at a family event and you hadn't seen long-lost relatives for the longest period of time. Strangers were just coming up to you and just talking. And I met so many people. It was a fantastic affair. And my number one thought is, like, why can't we do this on a regular basis? Because you know what? It's going to grow and grow and grow. I'm telling you.
Well, a regular basis, I don't know about, because you don't want events like this to lose their luster. There was something
you
very
don't want
special
saturate.
About it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And exactly. You don't, you know, if this starts happening once a month.
Well, no, you know what I meant. I mean, you know what? It shouldn't be that, you know, Gary Carter has to, you know, pass away.
No.
For us to have a reason for Expo fans to get together and celebrate things.
Agreed. And I think that we should continue to do things as Expos fans in the name of charity in our town. I think that is a very good model.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
I'm so happy that the MBP is donating to the same fund that we donated to the Sarah Cook Fund, because you know what? They need it. And our hospitals really are only going to be as good as we allow them to be. The actual funding is only so much. And
I'm going to make a promise to you, Dave, okay?
Yeah.
I didn't have time to authenticate it because the person who could have authenticated that picture, okay, was out of town. But the next time there's an event like that, I'm going to put up that Gary Carter, Martin Brodeur picture up for auction.
Oh, wow.
And I think that'll probably accumulate some serious bidding, that's for sure.
You're a good man, George. Thank you.
By the way, Shea Maurice, Saturday, May 19th, the Blushing Brides in St. Lazare. Hope to see you there.
I think I will. I think that on the Friday, I'm going to go down to McLean's for the 20th anniversary and see Joe Kearns. And then on the Saturday, I'm going to go down to, I'm going to make the trek, George. I'm going to come out to horse country.
I'm just coming back. Oh, by the way, before I let you go, Dave, okay?
Yeah.
I need that toll-free number because I'm going to be in Florida. I'm leaving on Wednesday and I'm coming back on the Friday. That's one of the reasons why I won't be able to come to the McLean's Pub celebration. But if you give me that toll-free number, because I'm planning, I mentioned this to somebody at the Gary Carter event that I was going to be catching the New York Mets and the Marlins play baseball.
Yeah, I think that was me. I think that was me.
and they told me it was sacrilege to say something like that at an event like that. Actually, it was this gentleman called Randy. He was dressed in an Expo jersey. And he was sitting at the back of the room, and we went outside because it was really hot, and we started chatting, and he said, well, if you're going to go to that game, I just want you to let you know. Don't even mention it. I'll never step into Marlin Arena to watch a game.
You know, I don't feel like talking about the Marlins right now. I hope you don't mind.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Yeah. But you know what?
I'm still on such a high. I can't believe we haven't talked about Bryce Harper and the Nationals yet. And I think that's a testament to how happy and where my mindset is right now.
I'm tweeting that number for you, George.
I miss baseball. That's That's what I'm just trying to tell you. I really miss that. By the way, $25, I'm putting my name on that list.
Good. Good. He's George is referring to the Ottawa baseball, I assume.
Exactly.
Wonderful.
And I'm so close. I'm much closer to you than Ottawa. So it's like an hour and 10 minutes drive away from me.
It's the same
so,
as you driving to the Big
perfect.
O.
It's perfect. Exactly.
You're equidistant, George, and I know that they appreciate it. And look at that. They got five more tonight just from us and you, and I'm sure that there's more people listening that want to support Ottawa Champs baseball as well.
Absolutely. I'm 100% for that.
George, thanks so much for coming. It was, really
my
nice
pleasure,
to
Dave.
Meet your son. And
keep up the great work.
It was nice to meet you, George.
I met him before.
I never met him before. And George, also, I just tweeted.
Jay, actually, we have met before.
We have?
Cooperstown.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We
you're
were
right.
at the Cooperstown, but yeah, actually, but Andrew saw me and he recognized me right away. I was
He's good that
him
way.
We were going to Cooperstown.
He was good that way. I had a few Ginai in me, so I'm sorry about that. Anyways, I just tweeted you the long-distance number if you want.
All right, perfect. I'm going to give you a buzz from Florida next week. How's that?
Looking forward to it.
All right, guys. Take it easy. Good night.
Thank you, George. I like him.
Yeah, he's cool beans, man.
Damn straight, and it was very cool of him to donate all of those photographs.
Yeah, and also, by the way,
and they raised a ton of money.
He's right about your giddiness. I couldn't believe the pressure that you were under, and you maintain that smile. Why are you so happy? Why are you so happy and I'm so miserable all the time?
It creates a good contrast for our radio show.
Is that what it is? The
yes.
dichotomy?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Keep being a miserable prick, okay?
Yeah, well, Dave, I mean, you were just, you were awesome. You really were awesome. You maintained your smile. And it's not, it wasn't a fake smile. You were genuinely happy.
Same smile that's on my face right now, man.
Yeah? The same smile that's on your face all the time.
Yeah, I'm a pretty happy dude.
I'm proud of you, buddy. That was a great thing that you did.
Thank you. And thank you, Montreal, for being there, because it meant the world to me. It was one of the most special nights of my life. And I'll never forget it. And hopefully next year's event will be even bigger, even better, and we can raise even more money. And I was going to say it when George was on there, but again, the Sarah Cook Fund, first of all, don't wait for an Expos event to donate to them. They have a website. They need help, and they do really good stuff. And like I was saying before, they're building this massive hospital that's the size of a city that's, I don't know, no more than a 10-minute walk from where we sit right now. And of course, you know, well, we're taxed like it's nobody's business. And that still doesn't guarantee that the hospital is going to be of a quality that you want. And if it's your kid that's in there and that's sick, and God forbid, but it happens, you want to know that they're getting the best treatment possible. And some of the stuff we got to choose where in the Sarah Cook Fund the money will be allotted to. And Jay and I talked about it, and music therapy and art therapy. To me, I really want the money to go to their music therapy and to their art therapy programs, because when a common thing that and this is all new to me, thank God I've never had to learn any of this, but when kids get cancer, especially kids, they close up. They don't communicate as well. They have a lot of trouble externalizing what's going on inside. And one of the great ways that they can help overcome that and forge an identity for themselves is through art and through music. And the Sarah Cook Fund hires people to help the kids that are battling cancer on the floor in the ward deal with that. And we all know how important music is. I talk about it all the time on this show, how much music means to me. And frankly, Thursday night would not have been the same without all that wonderful music. It was hard to be sad hearing so much joy coming from the stage. And hopefully the art therapy and the music therapy will improve the quality of lives for the kids that are so courageous and fight so hard. And thanks so much to Casey Taba for everything she did to help make that night a success. And you don't have to wait for a baseball-themed event. They need your money.
Go on right now and do it.
There you go. And we're going to start up that auction again for all the leftover stuff from our event last Thursday.
And there's some great stuff, too.
Yeah. Jonah Carey signed book, Just for Laughs tickets. Whole lot of stuff. We may even add to it. Start calling in some more favors. This is The Kaufman Show. And thank you again for last week. It was a real honor. And great to be with so many of my Expos brothers and sisters. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Our buddies, the Arkells, no champagne socialist.
No what in the champagne room? What?
No, that's a different song. That's a Chris Rock song.
Oh.
That will play for Crazy John when he comes to Montreal. This one is a no champagne socialist.
Ah.
He continues to insist that he's no champagne socialist. I've thought about that song a lot when I hear people foolishly refer to all the students as... with all of their iPhones and their $5 lattes, and why don't they get a real job, blah, blah, blah. I am so proud of the students.
Did Richard Nixon say that?
Oh, I'm not a crook.
blah, blah.
You'll pay. iPhone. You'll definitely pay. I don't think Richard Nixon ever said the word iPhone.
No, he didn't. Unless he said...
iPhone Brezhnev, and I get results,
and,
yes.
iPhone, and they recorded it.
Wow. How did that turn into that?
I don't know.
Okay.
Okay.
Where were we?
Something about students.
Yeah, I'm really proud of them.
Okay.
I know. We probably feel differently about this, don't we?
Nah. You know what? There's so many factors involved that I can't really take a solid stance on it.
Well, especially considering you can't blame every Hab fan when there's a riot after a playoff game, right?
Yeah, but I'm...
And you can't blame every student for one broken window.
No, and I saw, and even the police admitted today that a lot of the perpetrators that they did catch and they did arrest,
yeah, have not been to school since
1996.
Right. Exactly,
yeah. and also have records and arrest records of them being in other kind of protests, including the G8 summits.
Right.
So, I mean, yes, we can do that, but at the same time, don't dismiss it, because when people come off and say, "Oh, the people that were rioting are not hockey fans." That's bull.
Mm-hmm.
That's bull. They're wearing, they bought a $300 jersey so that they can go out and riot. They're anarchists, but they're going to go spend $300 at a Nike boutique, you know? It doesn't make any sense.
I can't think of another group in our country, really, other than students, that would have the balls, really, Jay, to go out there day in, day out for 12 weeks and do what they did. And... you know, the public be damned, and some guy going trying to get to work be damned. They went out day in, day out, night in, night out, and marched for what they believed in. And the media, the public, people on my Twitter feed, you have no idea how many times I've written a tweet about to be like, I can't believe you said this. I can't believe you think this, and then erase it. Because do I really want to get into this debate with somebody? Is it worth it? Am I going to be able to change their mind? You know, Dave Kaufman changing people's minds 140 characters at a time. No, not with this. People are so strong-headed. And the ones who, and I'll go back to it, the ones who worked downtown, who were disrupted, who got caught in traffic jams, they were the ones who were the most pissed off. And they never were able to comprehend the bigger picture in all of this. Nothing infuriated me more than saying, well, in Alberta, they pay this, and in Ontario, they pay this. Really, is that the standard now? When it's convenient, Quebec is distinct, and when it's not convenient, let's aim to be like Saskatchewan?
I don't want to be like Saskatchewan.
Oh, well, I don't know. I don't know enough.
The only problem I have,
Saskatchewan.
What? Like I said many times before, I am for chaos. I love chaos.
This was nothing about chaos, Jay.
You weren't standing in front of the pub when the police came and the rioters came and the protesters came and people were going down by the dozen. The only thing I don't care about them holding up traffic. I don't care about them smashing up the Apple store. I don't care about that stuff. But when you're smashing citizens, I mean, this is a social issue and you're fighting for social rights and you are smashing the private property of citizens. I'm talking about their cars, mm-hmm. working people who have to get home with their kids and you're painting up their cars and smashing people's cars. That's not good with me. It's not good with me. You want to go after the corporations or the media or the police? Fine. You're making a statement. That can always be repaired.
Again, though, don't. And the mistake that people make is that something like that happens. Somebody's car gets trashed.
Right.
And suddenly, every student at the UCAM is responsible for it.
I didn't say that.
I know you didn't. But that is the common theme of the last 12 weeks is that the students did this. It wasn't even the protesters. If you opened up a newspaper or anything online, it was students did this. You know what? End of the day, it's going to come out in the wash that a lot of these students were not students. They were protesters. They were organized protesters there to cause a ruckus and change the theme of this all. Because the students who want to have an affordable education aren't out there causing trouble. They're not. They want to go back to school. They want to be able to afford to go to school and not walk out of school tens of thousands of dollars in debt without a chance before you even start. And it's terrible that I graduated from university with a useless degree, a history degree. I guess I could have gone and no, I'm serious, Jay.
All right. You know, well, at least you graduated.
No, but you finish and what you can become, you can go do more school and become a teacher. Or you can do more school and become a journalist, which is what I did.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, you can basically go and do anything. You know, you can be the smart guy at the bar pulling pints, or you can be anything you want with a history degree. But all arts degrees, it's the same. They don't guarantee you a salary when you leave school. At least, you know, you're a lawyer and it costs you, I don't know how much, to get out of school and you're 40 grand in debt. At least you know that you're going to get a job afterwards that's going to guarantee you that you can pay back those debts eventually.
I see. Don't you find a sense of irony in this?
What do you mean?
Well, these students are going against the norm and against the government and against businesses and banks and so on so that they can go back to being indoctrinated. That's the amazing part to me. I just see a little bit of irony there.
But it's about wanting a fair
shake.
And
becoming exactly what they're fighting against.
It's about wanting a fair shake, Jeff.
Sure. No, I get it. Listen, I get the whole thing. I understand it. But maybe a little bit more leadership. How are these anarchists getting on the buses? How are they getting on the buses?
What do you mean?
They're getting on the buses to go down to Victoriaville. They're anarchists.
Jay, there's a Facebook message that says, everybody meet here and there's going to be buses.
Well, perhaps they should choose who they bring with them a little more careful, so that we don't get injuries, so a guy doesn't lose his eye. You know, be a little bit more careful about your protest, have a little bit more organization, and don't get these criminals on
the
bus.
All right, so there's a bar fight at your bar.
Right.
And it's your fault because you should have known that those guys were going to cause trouble when they walked in?
We're prepared for it. And yes, we do. We take steps in order to make sure that when we see a guy who we know is going to be trouble, you know, we take IDs at the door. We want to make sure that the man is not too intoxicated. We can see everything. We make sure we're responsible.
You cannot be at all places at all times, Jay.
No, but this is kind of a little bit different than a fight at a bar, isn't it?
Yeah, but you're
talking about life and death possibility here.
Yeah, and frankly,
I think they will be more careful.
It came awful close on Friday to life and death.
Yes, but I do actually think they will take more steps to be a little bit more careful on what kind of people they let in on the protest, and hopefully they will so nobody can get injured. I'm for it, man. I'm all for what they're doing.
Now, some schools have agreed to the deal that they struck. Some have not. This continues. Hopefully it continues in a peaceful manner.
I hope it doesn't happen. They get a civil war out of it. That's even worse.
The numbers are smaller now.
Yeah.
You know, and another thing that people never realized was that half the students weren't on strike.
Yeah.
every student I know, like the rabbit Charlie Lapin,
yeah,
that we saw studying at Second Cup the other day.
He was definitely not on strike. There were no red pieces of cloth on him. All there were books and laptops in front of him. The guy looked like he was ready to go.
I support the students and their desire to have a fair shake. Because one thing that we've learned in our society right now is how difficult it is to get a fair shake. And I wish them all the best, and I stand with them. I'm not wearing a red square, but I'm not on strike.
Oh.
Again, like I said, if you want, we will organize it. We'll get a camera crew. We'll go down there. I'll take a big red sign and say, save the Expos right in the middle of it. And we'll get pictures taken. And everybody will wonder what the hell I'm doing. And we'll have a shot of me with a Save the Expos placard. With
change the headlines totally the next day. Expos fans get out of control in downtown.
That's right.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Why? Expos fans causing havoc.
First we take Hurley's, then Victoriaville.
Yeah.
We'll get Sheree to listen to us eventually.
Yeah.
This is the Kaufman Show. And yeah, we want to change the world, right?
Sure.
Oh. At least, no. We want to let other people change it, and we want to comment on it.
That's right. Let them do all the hard work. We'll stay in here where there's no tear gas.
That's right. We are the pundits. This is the Kaufman Show. Jay and I will be back right after the break. We all want to change the world.
You don't knock.
Just walk on in
the door.
Detroit Cobras are coming to town, man. Having this conversation with Kaufman.
Who are they playing?
They're playing Club Lambie.
Oh, okay.
On St. Laurent Boulevard. It's in the 4500-ish
okay.
On St. Laurent. But we have till the middle of July to get the exact date for you. But get your tickets. That show will sell out. And you can see me and Kaufman Show legal analyst Dan Gradinsky there. Dan has a Detroit Cobras t-shirt. Probably the only person in this city. I don't think they've ever played here. I'm very excited. Let's, Bobby, Montreal Design on Twitter. Madman paid $250,000 to use a Beatles song. How much did you guys spend? Well, I spent about $300 because I bought that remastered set of the entire Beatles collection when that came out. So about 1/100th of what Matthew Weiner spent on Madman last night to play half of a song.
Is it a 1/1000th?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey, Jay.
Grade 9 math, my friend. That's what you get for having a history degree.
Yeah, exactly. You get grade 3
See,
math.
You were right. You proved your point.
Yeah.
I'm now an anarchist.
I should also know that DiMaggio had 56 games, not 54.
Yeah.
That's, you know.
No.
Shame on me.
Yeah.
As soon as I said it, I wanted to kick myself.
That's what I'm here for, the arithmetic.
I literally wrote a little note being like, get Kakalakis to erase that from the podcast. Let's make Kaufman sound a little smarter.
Keep that on, man. Keep that on.
And the Gene Siskel thing? I don't know if we should get rid of that or not.
No, whatever.
It's true. What's he going to do? Oh,
there it is. There it is. There it is.
So we're wrapping things up here. This will be the final segment of the night before I get into too much trouble. But we'll take some calls, 514-790-0990. And it is good to see Travis Reitzma piping in I don't know if I call him the Cuban or if I call him the anarchist or I don't know what
to call him.
Yeah, remember the whole Castro thing from a couple of weeks ago?
Okay.
But he says he'll be back in a couple of weeks. Actually, he wrote he'll be bad in 2 weeks, but I think he means he'll be back in 2 weeks. And he announced that Oh, look at that. On Friday, Sarah Jane Scouten will be playing the FM Lounge in Windsor. Very exciting. I guess Travis will be at the show, maybe even doing sound. Hopefully he has a better experience than he did with Sloan. So, yeah, Bobby, that Mad Men episode was pretty wild last night. Still nothing beats the trip from 2 weeks ago. I'm still blown away from that. And, Jay, if you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, oh, the trip to Plattsburgh?
No, the LSD trip that Roger Sterling takes.
Yeah, yeah. I saw that.
That was really interesting.
Yeah. Eh.
Just meh?
The show doesn't have the appeal that it has had once had with me before.
Why?
I think they're all out of storylines. I think they're done. Usually after the fourth season, that's what happens. So, I mean, I really think they have nowhere to go right now. And I could see the writing getting a lot weaker.
Really?
Lot weaker.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I am. Look at this, Jay. Again, yeah. we've walked into a great segment because we feel very differently about this.
Yeah. And you know what? For a show that takes so much pride in having the 60s, you know, the details of the 60s, the sets and the way they spoke and the mannerisms and the social issues of the 60s, you'd think they'd get a couple of people with Quebecois accents when they speak French, you know?
Oh, you're talking about the mom and dad.
Yeah. You know?
The mom I found was not Quebecois, but the dad I think was
he actually
the intellectual
is a Montreal
kind of
actor.
Yeah. He looked familiar.
Yeah, he did. But, I mean, no, I'm just, I don't know, I'm still watching, but it's not what it used to be.
I think it's fantastic.
But I have no patience, you know me.
Yeah, but yet you're a baseball fan. I don't understand how somebody can be as impatient as you, but love baseball as much as you do.
Because baseball is not boring to me.
Far from it.
Yeah, something's always happening in baseball.
Well, I feel like something's always happening in Mad Men. And what I keep, for me, it's what's going to happen next, because you kind of know where they are in history, and you know that things are coming.
Like, right, the late 60s.
Yeah, and I can't, I mean, and, you know, I'm not talking about Expo 67 or Jerry Park, or, I mean, obviously we want them to come up to Montreal on the show. That would be cool.
Yeah.
But, no, I find it to be, and again, I guess that's the history guy in me jumping out, but it's living history. It's the same reason that I like Mystery Ball 58, Jeff Pullman's blog, and his books about the Stratomatic in the 20s as well. It takes me to a totally different time. I can just close my eyes and I'm there. Or keep them open because it's a TV show with Mad Men, or a blog for that matter. But I think you all know what I mean. Well, you like that, Jay, as I dig myself into a hole, right? You're learning one of the most important things in interviews when somebody is falling apart, sort of like I just did there and kept rambling. You just keep your mouth shut and let them go.
Yeah, let them go. Let them go.
Let them ride right off the rails.
Yeah. And that's what Mad Men is doing, okay?
I hope not.
Not interested. Watching, like, Game of Thrones and stuff.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, that's getting tiresome, too. I have no patience at all. I got no patience at all.
What do you like?
I don't watch
other
TV.
Other than this show.
I don't watch TV. I just don't watch TV. I don't know why. I mean, there are a few shows that I'm interested in. A lot of the, you know, AMC or HBO stuff is cool, but I just don't watch TV. I watch TSN. You know, I watch games. I watch baseball. I watch hockey. But I'm not interested in any kind of network television whatsoever.
You also watch CTV Evening News, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
With my good friend Brian Wilde.
That's right.
Yeah.
Brian, I don't know if Brian Wilde's still awake right now, but if he is, I have a feeling he's listening. So, hey there, old balls.
Shout out to him, yeah. Glad to see you the other night.
Just got a DM suggesting that we have an honest debate about the student protests. It's really sad that the biggest story in Montreal in a while is being treated like a nuisance, and I couldn't agree more. I don't understand where people get off with such a lack of compassion and understanding for people that are in situations, in socioeconomic situations, that are far from enviable.
Right.
And I'm very disappointed with a lot of this town and the way they've treated this. I think, I honestly think this should have been embraced. We are different here. We are lucky as hell to live here. It's not like this anywhere else in Canada. And all of you listening across the country right now and across North America, trust me, Anglo-Montrealers have it real good. And I get that you have to speak French to get by here. And if you don't, shame on you, and you're missing out on a lot of the fun. You're narrowing yourself. You're living in a small town when you could be living in a metropolis, this town. And most of my time in this town is spent on the English side. Was this view that it was the French students and this that they were disruptive and that everything gets thrown down into language divides here. And if we could just look past that and realize how good we have it and what a benefit it is to our brains to be bilingual. It makes you smarter to be able to speak two languages. And it's mind-blowing that there are people in this town that can't. You're missing out. Anytime I've seen a ton of comments this week, and I'm going all over the place right now, but on how, you know, obviously Thursday did bring back some talk of baseball and of a stadium. Stadium has to be on the west side of town. What kind of a narrow-minded view is that? What, do you think there's no money east of St. Laurent? You think there's no passion? You think there's no love for the game? Where do you think Delorme Downs was? In the east end of Montreal. French people like baseball. I don't know why Anglophones have trouble with that one. But for some reason, Anglophones think in this town, Jay, that they were the people that were at the stadium at the end. And that there was it was just them holding on. And that the French stopped caring about baseball. Couldn't be further from the truth. I was so happy that François Gagnon wrote that article, that blog piece. Merci, François. It was really cool of you to write that. I did not want anybody to think that we were not inviting Francophones on Thursday. Yeah, it was in an English part of town, and yeah, all the bands were English. And you know what? I'm English, and my connections are English. And it was great that François was able to help get the word out. And I saw that RDS's Mark Griffin, former ball player, tweeted saying, I wish I was at Hurley's tonight, but I've got something I got to do. The word got out. And we've got to tackle this one together. And in so many ways, I mean, yes, with baseball, we need to tackle this together. Because if the English side is doing something and the French side is doing something, then we are severely limiting ourselves. And I think that cuts across to not just baseball, but to everything else. Including these students. And yeah, you know what? There's a lot more money at McGill. And there's probably a lot less strikers at McGill because of it. There's probably also a lot more kids at McGill who are there on mommy and daddy's dime. And these kids that were out in the street for 12 weeks, there's no way their parents are helping them. Because if my parents were helping me and I was in university and I told my dad that I was going on strike, I can't imagine what he would have said. What, you're going on strike with my money?
You're definitely striking now.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Dad, can I have some more money so I can be more independent, please? I don't think that's what we saw. And I think that people's preconceived notions are always bad. And we've given a few examples of why. So I hope you just enjoyed that debate with myself about the two solitudes that I love so much. And it's tough. It's sometimes it's tough to be, you know what? I'm sure that Francophones say that it's tough to be French in Canada. And sometimes it's a barrier to be an Anglophone in Montreal, where my French is at a level that allows Francophones to think, oh, what a cute accent. What state in the U.S. are you from? This is home. And it will always be home, no matter where we live. And you know, and I see that with like guys like Jeff Baker, who was in studio with us last week, who probably hasn't called Montreal home in 20 years, but loves it here. We're lucky and we need to learn how to share it better. You got anything to say, you?
No. I mean, like I said, you don't always have to pick a side on things. Going back to that, it's not nothing is black and white.
No.
Nothing is black and white. Everything is
shades
of gray.
No, and one guy is striking for one reason and another guy is striking for another.
Sure. And you know what? I'm not talking because I know exactly what's going on. I don't know all the politics of it. I know the gist of it. I only speak from what I see, from the angle of the street. And that's that. I'm not going to ever pretend like I know what I'm talking about or pretend to know what I'm talking about. I mean, I'm going to say how I feel and what I've seen from personal experience and nothing more. It's shades of gray. You don't always have to take such a strong side against something, nor do you have to take one for one. You have to see it for what it is.
There's nothing wrong with having an opinion and then gaining more information and changing one's mind.
Right. Shades of gray.
There's nothing wrong with that. And for some reason in this day and age, maybe it's to do with politics, but that seems to be frowned upon. Flip-flopper.
Yeah. Hey, listen, it's the human condition.
Right.
Pick a tribe and pick the tribe that, you know, everybody wants to be accepted. And like I was talking about indoctrination before, you see it. They start it really early. Froshes. You become a part of a team. Mm-hmm. Everybody wears the same shirt, the same color shirt. And it makes, sure, I mean, honestly, it does make people feel like they're a part of something. But open your minds up. Think about what the people in the red shirts are doing. Think about the people in the orange shirts or the green shirts. Think about it for a second.
You know,
don't always have to be part of a team.
No, it's good to have your own ideas sometimes.
Yeah.
And something that I think gets lost in all this, Jay, is that the people out there on strike are the future of this province. They are the future leaders of this province. And they just want a fair shake. And just because people haven't gotten their stuff together in the rest of the country doesn't mean that the students here should be looked upon badly for wanting what in all, every definition of what's fair and what's right in the world says that education should be universal. You should not be discriminated against for wanting to better yourself. So my hat's off to them. And I hope it ends soon. And I really hope there's no more violence, because so much more will get done if it's peaceful. You know, a kid almost died on Friday night in Victoriaville. And that's terrifying.
Yeah.
And probably the only reason that things ended and the negotiations happened as quickly as they did was because some kid lost his eye and was in pretty bad shape.
It scared the hell out of everybody. It scared, and it should. They didn't think that this was going to happen? I mean, it goes on and on and on until eventually someone's really going to get hurt or killed.
Let's go to the phones. We've got Frank. Good evening, Frank. Hello, Frank.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good. How are you?
Not bad. I don't know, boys, but politics.
Sorry, is that a one-word thing?
Yeah, a sports station. Let's talk sports.
All right, what do you want to talk about, Frank? What do you got for us?
It's cool, bro. Thanks, man.
All right, dude. Have a good night, buddy. Frank on his cell. Drive safe, my friend.
Was that the saxophonist from the Muppet Band? Just sounded like him.
I don't know who that was.
Yeah, we got carried away. We admit it. Yeah. All right. Let's talk sports.
You know what? I'm sorry if I wanted to get my two cents out there, Frank. And I hope you enjoy the show. And I hope you enjoyed all of the sports talk that we've brought out tonight. So, Jay, who's going to be the next coach of the Montreal Canadiens?
Me.
Okay.
Yeah, let's just do that.
I nominate Frank.
Well,
I like, you know what I like about Frank? Frank reminds me of John Tortorella. Frank called in and went, politics.
Yeah.
And that could have been John Tortorella at a press conference after a game. That was about the length of a John Tortorella press conference.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call, Frank.
Well, you know how we are, Dave. We get a little carried away.
Yeah, because you know what? Frank, there's more to the world than just sports. And we've been on air since 11 o'clock, and we've been talking sports since 11 o'clock. And sometimes life gets in the way. And Lord knows you turn on your radio any time of day, and you hear people complaining about these students, and complaining about the traffic, and complaining about their lattes, and telling you to go to Norway. So I have a feeling we know where Frank stands on this side of the coin. because I have a feeling that if I was sitting here trashing the students like everybody else does, then Frank would have called in and said, attaboy.
Well, we don't know that for sure.
Let him call back.
I hope he does.
Yeah. Let him pull over, though. No driving and talking.
Yes. Yeah, it's especially
that's
when
you're just angry. That's just crazy.
Don't drive angry.
Can I change the pace a bit over here?
Yeah, go ahead.
John Kakalakis. What's up, man?
For Frank's sake, please do.
Yeah,
<seriously.
laughs> For Frank's sake.
No, I just wanted to say, what were you guys 10 years ago today when Allen Iverson gave practice a new meaning?
Yeah, or you know what? I'll tell you where I was 14 years ago today when Kerry Wood had his 20 strikeouts.
Ooh.
And was it... How many? And it was also the anniversary of Reggie Miller's 8 points in 8 seconds.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like a massive day. And
1995,
course,
that's right. I think it's 94, sorry.
It's for some reason, May the 7th is this iconic day in sports. And I'll be honest with you, when I saw all those, you know, coincidences, I was thinking, what's going to happen today? And what happened today was that the Phoenix Coyotes / Winnipeg Jets franchise has now gone further in their history than they ever have.
The NHL-owned Phoenix Coyotes.
That's right.
Yeah.
And as a Montreal Expos fan, I'm cheering for the Coyotes. And I know people have such issues with that because it's like, oh, you're cheering for Bettman and Bettman's going to have his name on the cup. I don't care. I'm thinking about the fans.
Sold out tonight?
Yeah, well, you know what? I wouldn't be thinking about the fans if it wasn't sold out.
Yeah, I mean, but you know what, Dave? How many fans are there? I mean, people compare, I mean, you know what? We're making a mistake.
Enough for there be a campaign for them to want it to stay. And when the Expos left, there were nobody in the stands.
That is true.
There, it's sold out right now.
Yeah, but if we had made the first round of the playoffs and been the wild card.
Okay, well, good
remember
on.
Remember that Philly series in the last hurrah?
I'll never forget it. Yeah. Now, good on the National Hockey League for allowing Phoenix to compete at a level that enabled them to make the Final Four.
Right.
MLB did not afford that luxury to the Montreal Expos. So go Coyotes. And I know that everybody that grew up cheering for the Nordiques hates me for saying that. But you know how it feels. Put yourself in their shoes.
It's hard to be on the other side of the coin.
It is. We saw
shades
it with,
of gray, Dave.
That's right. We saw it with Sherman Alexie.
Yeah.
From Sonicsgate, the Supersonics fan. Ha, you like how I did that? The Supersonics fan?
Yeah, very well done.
Talking about how he'll cheer for a team. If they get New Orleans, he'll cheer for them. But he wants his own team. And that really is, at the end of the day, how you want to do it. You want that expansion franchise. I'm happy for them. How many fans? However many it is, let them experience it. The fans that have invested their time and their effort over 15 years deserve to be rewarded. And remember how bad you all felt, Nordiques fans, when they left and won the cup the next year. Wouldn't it be nice if the Coyotes could win a cup before leaving? And at least give the fans that. Wouldn't you have killed for a World Series, a pennant, a playoff spot, anything before the Expos left town? Just would have canceled out a little bit of that what if. We wouldn't be left having to play Stratomatic to settle it all.
The good news is if the Phoenix Coyotes go on, and let's say they do win the Stanley Cup,
mm-hmm.
and they still cannot draw next year, well, then they deserve to lose their team. They deserve it. If you can't draw after a cup win, and you're still drawing the same amount of fans, well, then they should go to Quebec City.
Yep.
But give them a last chance. Give them a chance. I'm not rooting for them. I really don't care at all. But at the same time, it makes for an interesting storyline.
Pretty cool that coming out of the West Coast will be guaranteed a hockey team that has never won the Cup.
Yeah.
So that's kind of exciting. There's something to root for with
something
that.
Something new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And from everything you can tell from the media, L.A. is just hockey mad right now.
Yeah. Well, they have a good fan base. They always have.
Yep.
So, and wow, they look unstoppable right now.
Yeah, they look great.
They've only played 9 games. You
I know
that?
They've lost once. It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And you got to assume that that'll keep them fresh. And the East just looks so worn out, Jay.
Yeah.
Everybody just looks, I mean, Philly left it all on the table against Pittsburgh. And Jersey
looks good.
Yeah, yeah. But
I'm not convinced by Jersey.
You can hear the hesitation in my voice as well. I'm not convinced. I believe in Martin Brodeur, but there have been games, especially in the first round, where Martin Brodeur looked old.
That's way past what's going on in the second round.
Yeah, it's been turned back the clock week in New Jersey.
Well, is Jersey winning or is Philly losing? That's the question.
I'll give credit to Jersey,
yeah,
especially game two. They come out in the third period. They're down 1-0. They could be going home down 2-0 in the series.
Claude
score
Giroux,
four unanswered.
We know Giroux is very frustrated right now. And is that a testament to Jersey shutting him down?
Well, it's the second time in the playoffs that he's gotten frustrated. Don't forget. He had that whole ridiculousness with Crosby.
Right.
The Sunday game that turned into a wrestling match.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was awesome.
Oh, so how was that, Frank? Was that good? We passed the audition?
Yeah.
All right, so what do you want to talk about now? Can we go back to crumbling info? Well, we haven't talked about the Turcotte yet. You want to talk about the Turcotte?
No, I don't want to talk about the Turcotte.
I'm joking. Come on. No, I think we're going to call it a day right now, actually. What do we have planned for next week?
Oh, we got a show.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you right now that we're going to talk a little boxing next week. We're going to have a special in-studio guest.
Great.
And a whole lot of other good stuff.
As always, my friend.
Damn straight, buddy.
As always, my friend.
No, you got to...
We go off on a tangent sometimes, but it happens, you know? We get into it. It's discussion.
The world is about more than just sports. You're listening to Montreal Sports Authority. TSN 990. There's a reason that I love this town. Nobody cares how much money you have. If you've got enough to get in a cab, there'll be drinks on the house if your house burns down. There's a reason that I love this town. I saw your band in the early days. We all understand why you moved away. We'll hold a grudge anyway. I shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, then I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. There's a reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel. We're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. You saw my band in the early days, then you understand why we moved away. You hold a grudge anyway, because it's fun. Davey and me face down in our suit, some French restaurant. I saw Riviere de Loup last night at a tour. We burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. You've been listening to The Kaufman Show. For Jay Farrar, I'm Dave Kaufman. We'll be back next week at 11 o'clock.
I don't know. What'd that sound like?
A lot of the Anglophones that I come across on my day-to-day travels.